You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
Hi everyone, welcome to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com. This is the sort of new Friday audio chat, but of course it is not Friday, it's Saturday morning, so I will need to come up with a name for the show, but it's not a pressing issue at the moment. So, as you can guess, because it's Saturday morning, I am Garris from Geneva, Switzerland, and I am with Ab, otherwise known as Fakeologist. Welcome, Ab.
Thank you. Good morning. Let's call it SAC. Saturday Audio Chat. SAC.
SAC, yes. And let's call that episode, because we are only the two of us, the board of directors. Because you are the creator and I am the sole moderator, so it's kind of a board of directors.
That's right. It's an executive meeting.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we can go over some happenstances on the Fakeologist site and other sites for the week. We can cover some whatever happened during the week, I guess, is a good way of doing things. I use my blog, of course, as a notepad for what happened during the week. I got two blogs I'm pretty active on, my own, fakeologist.com, and my sublog, moreab.fakeologist.com, which Moreab does not talk about fakeology, although it's written by a fakeologist, but mainly it's political stuff that I'm interested in, or health stuff that I don't really see a fakeologist angle to. So if anyone is curious, that's... And I also have savechat.fakeologist.com. I was going to use that mainly for Twitter-like entries, really short entries, where I don't really have much to say, but I just want to document the article. But I don't use that very much. I actually use Twitter more than I have in the past. The main reason I use Twitter is because I can tag people. You know, you can type in their username, and they get an email.
Yes.
They get an email or a notification. They get an email or a notification.
Yes, you get some people which they post a picture with a text of maybe 3 lines, 6 or 7 words, and they tag half the planet.
And although Twitter is it's owned by another company, it's owned by a company, and they can delete or edit your tweets to whatever they want, Mastodon, which is a competitor. Jesus, hold on. Just trying to get on the highway here. These guys drive like they're in the Indy 500, even at 5 in the morning. They see a space, and they floor it to block you. And at night, it's hard to see. It's hard to see what they're doing at night, because as I get older, my eyes slowly fade away, which is sad. But anyhow, I started fakeologist.social, but I don't think that's really catching on right now. And we need someone like Donald Trump to come to Mastodon social, the Mastodon server. But the problem there is. The problem there is also the solution. The problem is it's not centralized, so everyone's messages are on separate servers, so they probably won't get seen. But, of course, that's the beauty of the service, where nobody can really censor you, but it's like a tree falling in the forest. If a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, did it make a sound? And it's the same as Mastodon. If you send a tweet, but nobody reads it, did you really send it?
Yes. Yes, that's why many people in the conspiracy world continue to try to create YouTube channel, even though they are getting erased at every time, because they know that's where the audience is.
That's right. That's right. Our, you know, I guess the YouTube audience has been so badly abused because their favorite channel keeps disappearing. Eventually, they just probably get tired of looking for it and then just default to whatever's there, whatever's served up on the YouTube platter.
Yes, I think that at one point...
It is too much work to follow someone who... Yeah.
It starts to erode your viewer base. And yes, each and every channel that you create, you probably lose 5% of your audience. So if they do it... enough time
in
a specific period. Yes, but I mean, the people that will not make the step to find your channel back.
Well, you probably lose most of them. I'm not...
Yes.
Brian Stavely and Infinite Plane Society, they say they've been canceled 10s and 20s and 50 times. I can't keep track of those guys anymore. I don't know where the hell they are. I'm not even going to look. I'm not going to waste my time. So... they lost me 100% of the time.
Yes. Speaking of censorship, there is a lady named Shoni that is posting at time in the Discord. She is not the most active participant, but she is there and she is participating. And the other day I saw on the Discord that she was back on the server. That, as far as I know, she never left. And I asked her what... is it a new profile? Have you lost your ID? You lost your phone and you don't know to connect into your account? And she said no. She said that she was reported for online harassment or bullying or something of that nature. And that her Discord account was disabled entirely.
Yeah, well, somebody from Twitter was trying to log into the server. And I said, well... you should just press the connect button on my website. It's a always open invitation. And they said they clicked it and it was expired. I said, well, how could it be expired? It's said to never expire. So maybe that was the person who was complaining. I don't know. I don't control Discord, just so everybody knows. I don't own it. We're using the platform and somebody, who knows who owns it? Maybe the CIA owns it. I don't know. So you can't, don't come to me if you can't get on, because I think you banned one person. There's really nobody else banned.
Yes, I banned 2%. Right. But,
you banned a couple.
Yes, I only banned Shoulder Charge and Dreamer Dave.
Yeah, was that the same person, or...
I don't know. Dreamer Dave was a nuisance, but at least he was trying Shoulder Charge. He was just there to tell us that 9/11 was a real event. So.
Oh, okay. Well, good for him.
And it's
so
only entertaining for a short while, let's say.
Yeah.
So, fake event it is, yes. We were speaking off-air about a case, a French case, which is named the Gregory case, in the name of a child that allegedly disappeared on, I think it is October 1984. I was watching a documentary on that case, trying to make sense of it and see if there is any truth to it. And it's very, very, very difficult to establish this with such an old event, let's say. The older the event is, it's getting more and more difficult to see the fakeness in it if it's not already established. Like, for example, an event that just happened and people are reacting on it live, let's say, or almost.
Okay. I don't know anything about it.
Yes, it's just a basic, let's say, a child disappearance case. But on the larger perspective, yes, it the question was for me that some of those events that happened in the 80s or early 90s, they were not really questioned like they might have been if they happened in the internet age. So the information for it is more difficult to find on a conspiracy angle, let's say.
Well, yes, I get you. Well, we had, I know what you're doing. You're looking back into the past at different events, and I have done the same. We had many disappearing girls. It's mainly girls. We had many disappearing children, 8, 9 to 12 years old in the 80s here in Toronto. And I've looked at them as well. One of my most remembered stories, I think it was from the 80s. You can look it up. I have posted upon. I think I posted to it years ago on fakeologist.com. It was the Alison Perrot case. Her name was spelled like a parrot, P-A-R-R-O-T. I guess it's French. I don't know. You can look it up. The thing that reminds me, yeah, it's on my site.
Like
it's Prosper, probably on Wiki. Alison Perrot, P-A-R-R-O-T.
Ah, okay, like the bird.
Like the bird. I just remember it was a big deal because I started going downtown in Toronto when I was 11 by myself to school on the subway or metro, wherever you call it. And this was a similar story where she went somewhere to actually near to where I went to school, downtown Toronto, very near, obviously years after I was there. And she was snatched off the street. I think she was meeting a guy that was going to take her picture, which I would never let my child go meet someone to take their picture when they're 12 years old.
Yes.
Anywhere without me going. But I think this is a story. I just remember she disappeared, and I think it took a few weeks, and then they found her body.
On Wikipedia, they said that the remains were found 2 evenings later.
Oh.
King's Mill Park.
Yeah, which would be down the subway line a few miles from where she disappeared.
Yes. So obviously it's easier if you want to create a fake child disappearance to do it if the child is not...
I just remember her mother, because what stands out about this case is her mother was very well spoken, and then I think it turns out she was in the media. So anytime someone is in the media business, I get very suspicious. Because, of course, these people are culture creators. They're used to create our culture and make social change and make things happen. So when they are involved, then we have to be very cautious as to what we're experiencing. Because most parents and most people are not media savvy. They're not able to form thoughts and say things in a controlled way if their child is killed. I mean, come on.
Yes.
That's a life-changing event. If your child is brutally killed, you're going to be a mess. Maybe you'll be in therapy for a year. I don't know. You're not going to be calm, cool,
probably
and collected.
Not. Probably not, yes. The thing is that to fake a child disappearance, it's a way easier if the child is not of school age, because then not that many people interact daily with supposed kids, so it makes for less fake witness to create. But if you talk about a child that is like 12 years old, and I'm not saying that this case is real because of that, but yes, the the older the child is, the more people are supposed to interact with him or her. So it takes more work, let's say, to create a fake story than just a 3 or 4 year old that is in the end only really known by the family circle. Yeah.
What year was that Alison Perot thingy?
It was 1986.
Okay. See, I knew it. And I don't know if you can find the entry I made on my blog. I know I'm pretty sure I made some comments on it. Do you want to try and find it and see what I said? To see if I was...
Yes.
See if I spoke better. See if I wrote something more intelligent than what I'm saying now.
Yes, but of course, sometimes... Yes, the Alison Parrot case. It was a 2016 entry. August... Okay. So I will read what you posted on 2016 about this. There has been recent interest in my Parrot post. So obviously that's not the original post, but I will read it already. There has been some recent interest in my Parrot post, a 30-year-old murder in Toronto that may add many crimes theme of the day, including capital punishment and later DNA evidence. It's hard to find all footage of the case, but they did make a movie on it. And it also included characters from 7-7 and an IRA bombing. The movie is called Forgiveness. A few smiles, but not a tear in sight. Does time heal all wounds, or is hard even to cry over a fake event here later? I'm convinced 7-7 was an HRDPR. The other two cases have less info, but doubtless are following the same crime hoax template. And that was what you wrote about it. That was a follow-up on your earlier post.
Okay, yeah, maybe sometimes on my blog I can see when people are looking at old posts or linking to old posts. Maybe that's what I saw. Or sometimes individual pages I get statistics about. So if many people are looking at an old post, you have to wonder, well, why? Well, why is anyone... The only reason you find an old post is if you searched on Google. And I don't know how Google works too well. So if Google brings up a post on a case, and then I get a statistic saying that someone looked at this particular page, not the main blog. So that's probably why I did it, because I don't look every day to see what people are looking at. I really don't look at all, but sometimes I do, and that came up. So I wonder if you could look up the... Did I make another post on that? On
the
my
original
blog?
One. You could just... Yes.
Yeah.
I have the original one, I think, in front of me, so I will read that one also.
Okay. Just give me one sec before you start reading
of
it.
Course.
Just give me one sec.
Yes, yes.
And then, because I want to hear what great things I said. But just give me
a second
here. I gotta get.
Yes, yes. I will find something about Alison Perrot that might be of interest. There is an insane amount of young lady named Alison Perrot or Parrot that. Okay. So there is a YouTube channel about Alison Perrot, but that's not the Alison Perrot we are speaking about. And of course, since the event are that old. So but it's the clear illustration of what I was saying. It's very, very, very difficult to establish fact about some event that is so old. Incredible. Incredible. Absolutely nothing on the Alison Parrot case that I can find on YouTube via a quick search. Impressive. Very impressive. You would have thought that all those true crime shows would have done something on that case. Yes, impossible, or at least on a quick search, to find anything related to that case on YouTube, in the, at least. But yes, of course, the case is more than 30 years old by now. And even though those cases might seem relevant to us, it's a matter of public perception. What happened with this kind of case? The case I mentioned earlier, the Affaire Grégory, l'Affaire Grégory, as it is called in the French media, it's kind of different because, firstly, there are not that many child disappearances in France, at least at the time there was not, or the media were not mentioning them for some reason. So it was kind of a shock in the public, and also
the
story is, yes, I was speaking a bit about the Gregory case. Yes, like I said, the story is captivating for the public, so it makes for a good rise on the press selling number. But anyway, I'm going
Wait,
to
what
read
year,
what you wrote
is that
about.
Your, is that the French
the
case
French
you're talking
one.
About, your case? What year
yes,
was that?
1984.
No, what, the French case?
Yes, and the Canadian one is 1986.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say, is that because we know that hoaxes are, and the intelligence agencies, are, of course, are worldwide, I don't say global, just in case people don't believe in the globe, I think they share their stories, of course, that work across the world. So if a story works in Toronto, it's going to work in Paris, too. But, of course, you need local content, so you need all the characters to be local. Nobody in Paris cares about a child being murdered in Toronto. They just don't. Why would you? It's too far away, and you can't
identify.
It
really depends. If you can tweak the case in an interesting manner. Like, for example, in the French story, they had the cousin of the father accused. So later in the story, the father shot and killed his cousin, so he was in jail. But they were accusing
his wife
of being the killer.
There's
so
nothing
the
you can put
factor.
In the story. There's nothing you can put in a story in Paris to get me interested. I'm just not interested. It's too far away. But if it's in Toronto, near in areas that I've walked in or worked in or played in, I'm interested. I'm hooked. Tell me. I'm not interested in something in a faraway land, and that's it. I think everyone is that way. I don't care what twist you put in the story, because it's French, and it's going to be in French, and I don't know Paris, I've never been there, and I don't know any of the things that go on in French society, I don't know any of the ins and outs. I'm not interested. So it's really, I think these stories have to be localized to make them appealing.
Yes, and also, if those stories are made up to induce fear, it's always better to have a local boogeyman than someone killing children in France. It will not make you not send your kids outside to play, because it's in France, so it has no real fear factor, direct fear factor for you and your kids. So, of course, they will have to make one for Toronto just to get the kids to stay inside, for example, if that's the case.
Right. So the point is, you brought up your story. I thought my story was in the same time zone or era. Therefore, I see a pattern. And we could not see those patterns before in the 80s. I know you weren't even born probably, but we didn't see patterns because we didn't have this great internet where we can literally pull up everything anywhere and see if there are similarities and if there's a template. So let's read what I said in my first post, please. And what was the date on that?
Okay. Oh, can I see the date? Copy text.
Should be on the bottom.
Okay, 2013.
I made that in
2013? Yes, 2013.
Oh, wow. And this
late
is 2019.
Yes.
So I've been doing this for 7 years, so I want to see how smart I was in 2013.
Okay, I'm starting to read. Now that it appears Toronto is a PSYOP central, I've decided to dig up a few memorable, highly promoted cases. A quick look and the pervasive 11 appears. 11s in plural. And the pervasive 11s appear. I will never forget her very public mother reacting emotionally to either her disappearance or death on TV. It has bothered me to this day, and perhaps now I know why. Alison Parrott, September 28, 1974, July 25, 1986, was an 11-year-old girl who went missing from home in Canada, in Toronto, Canada. Her remains were found 2 evenings later in a densely wooded area of King's Mill Park at about 11 o'clock on the morning of 3 dots. Leslie, at work, got permission to attend the session. the same man had 11 days earlier while Allison had been at summer camp asking for her. So on that part, obviously, you kind of took out of the story the 11 that were there. So three dots.
Yeah. May. So there's lots of 11s. Yeah, 11. Yes. The hoax code, people. It's a hoax code. Any multiple of 11, 22, 33, 44. That's code. If it's repeating many times, then you have to look closely. It's hoax code. It's not. There's no magic numbers. There's nothing magic. It's just a code that they put in the stories to keep the people in the know aware of what's real and what's not. Go ahead.
Yes. So, May 1987, Leslie Parrott, aided by colleagues at the advertising agency where she worked, launched the Canada-wide Stay Alert, Stay Safe program. The capture and trial was even more disgusting and odd. I let you research that if you wish. Here is a recent interview from GC. I don't know who is GC, but it was probably someone related to the story. And here is a link to the other murder activist born out of a murder. So another story that might be similar. Interesting, the two women in those stories seems to be from South Africa. As the commenter said, there are never any fathers speaking out. Both became activists, fundraisers, advocates. One even tried to become a politician. Certainly odd behavior. The results were laws were changed. Another noble set of lies. And voila.
Yeah. Does that link to the video still work?
Excellent question. It's a link of the Winnipeg Free Press. It's there. It's still there.
And there's a video there?
I'm scrolling down the page. There is a picture of some lady that for some reason are old and, yes, rather old. No, I don't see a video at that point, but...
I wonder if our national broadcaster here is the CBC, Canadian Broadcast Corporation. I wonder if they have archives of the mother speaking in 1986. It was just her accent, which I like South African accents, and her accent, and just she had a couple tics where when she spoke, she said things in a strange way. A tic is usually a tell. People have a certain mannerism to their speaking. A tic, and that's usually a tell. When you're lying, then you tic very hard. You tick a lot. So it's a tell.
I found something of that lady, but this is, we will listen to it, but there might be a small introduction that we have to go through to have the chance to hear that lady. Notice that the video is way older than the case itself. The video is dating from 2011, so... It's an old lady that we are going to hear speak right now, and I'm press play, and it starts. If everything is
here with Luke McCallum, your host for Beautiful Lives.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
What more do you want tacked onto this? 9/11 was an inside job?
Was it?
Who cares? Global acts of terrorism happen every day.
Host the Beautiful Lives.
Okay, so I have to restart the video because I was trying to skip the intro and I skipped the thing altogether. So we are going to suffer through that cheesy intro.
Yeah, no problem.
Welcome to Beautiful Lives. I'm Liz McCallum, and I am thrilled to have you join me today on the show. I first of all want to thank you for the tremendous reaction we got to our show last episode from literally every continent. It was spectacular. I was so honored by the compliments, and thank you to our guests who made it amazing. Well, today we are going to be, again, talking about beautiful lives and what people have done with the circumstances and their skills and their gifts and how they have taken the world to become a little bit of a better place. And as you may or may not know, for the last 22 years, since 1989, I have been doing corporate training all over Canada, Australia, New Zealand, etc. And one of the things that I have had a real focus on, a passion actually about, is resilience and dealing with change. And how come two people can go through a divorce and one person just kind of soars and blooms and the other one struggles for so long? Downsizing, all of these types of blows that life brings us. What is the trick to the people who, you know, sort of thrive in these circumstances? I've been working on that since 89 and training, and I have learned and heard a thousand stories. As a guest today, a woman who has a story that most of us would never want to have in our back pocket. And she's going to be talking today about resilience and, bigger than that, the power of love. I have Leslie Perrott with me today. So I want to start with our interview with Leslie, and I'm going to show you a quote that on the birthday of her daughter, Allison, she posted on Facebook. Can you see that? It's on the screen. And Leslie, I want to welcome you to the show, and do you want to talk about this quote? What happened that day?
Sure. Well, first of all, Liz, it's wonderful to be here.
Thank you.
And to be with you.
Thank you.
September 28 was my Allison's birthday. She was born 37 years ago, and we lost her tragically 25 years before. And I just got moved, and I often do, mention her on Facebook. And people really respond. I think it's a way that people can reach out. And it's one of the ways, in a funny way, that in a public way, I can still be Allison's mum. And I can still talk about the love that surrounded her. And people want to know how I am. And as the years have gone by, and I've gotten stronger and stronger, and been able to say that and feel okay about saying that, it warms people's hearts. And I get phenomenal feedback that just gives me the strength to keep going.
We have, as an audience, Leslie, we have people who maybe don't know what happened with Allison.
Sure. In 1986, 25 years ago, Allison was 11 going on 12, and she was a budding little track star. She was ready to go and compete on behalf of Ontario in the U.S., and somebody phoned our home in Midtown to Toronto and asked her to go to Varsity Stadium, a big sort of sports facility, to have a picture taken, she thought, with all her team members for the upcoming event. And it seemed a kind of natural thing that she would get some recognition for this. There had been a little bit of other, you know, requests and publicity. So she called me, asked for permission, and off she went. And her body was found 2 days later in a ravine in Toronto, and she had been raped and strangled.
A little 11-year-old girl.
Little 11-year-old girl, and our lives started all over.
Anyway, we are not going to listen to the whole awful story that the lady is telling, be it true or not, but it was just for the sake of hearing her with her own word, let's say.
No, yeah, that was good. That was good. I wish I could find the news conferences when she was on the TV every night. Well, I guess for two nights about her child. You know, I hope the story's not true, but it's just so many 11s I remember. These are the kind of things that you need to find. And okay, you could say it's a great coincidence, but this blog is not called Coincidologists. We don't have a ton of evidence other than what I put out there, but it seems she seems okay now all these years later, which I guess is, time does heal all wounds, we are told. But
yes.
She doesn't seem
yes,
too
and I get to say that we have been joined by DV and John LeBon, so apparently Australians are up, even though John LeBon is still in Asia. Australians are there. So welcome, guys. If you want to say a word or introduce yourself, you're welcome
yeah.
to.
It's 8 p.m. in Australia, 14
okay.
hours ahead. So it's okay. It makes sense that they're up.
How's
I know
it going,
BB.
Guys? This is Baby.
Hi.
Hi, Baby.
How you doing?
Fine, fine.
I'm all right. I got a small case of post-nasal drip, but I'll survive.
Is it a hay fever?
Pardon?
Is it the hay fever?
No, there's no hay now. It's cold out here. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, that's true.
Everything that was alive should be dead that has pollen. So it's just obviously a misconfiguration of my nasal cavities where they're tilting back instead of forward.
I came halfway in on this, so where you guys were discussing Leslie Parrott's child was murdered, was it?
Yeah, well, Jairus brought up a case in France that he was researching, and that sparked my memory of a case in Toronto that I posted about. And mm-hmm. knowing what we know about PSYOPs, they tend to have templates that they share around the world. So in the 80s, lots of girls, little girls, children, went missing and murdered, at least in Toronto. And that is as far as I remember, because I didn't follow cases around the world. And I was just looking for similarities and patterns. We had quite a few other young girls disappear, I know for sure, in the 80s and early 90s. But since then, nobody has gone missing or disappeared or been strangled or raped that I can think of for a long time now. Now, is that because parents are helicopter parents and they fly their children all around, even one block, without letting them out of their sight? Maybe. Maybe. But...
yeah.
We're just looking for, we're looking for clues.
Yeah, the 80s seemed to have... Yeah, sorry.
Yes, it was maybe made to, like I said, keep the children at home in front of the TV a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Would you let your... I think you're a new parent, BB.
Mm-hmm.
If your child was 11, would you let them go downtown wherever you are just for a photo shoot? I mean, how independent do you think your 11-year-old is going to be when they're 11?
Yeah, I think the whole month of November is banned in my household, I think. I'm just going to skip November.
Yeah.
<You know? laughs> But yeah.
Yeah, the 11th month.
And, was it in Canada, they do it the other way around, do they? Oh, no, it's still 11. Anyway, sorry. The way you write it, or whatever.
Oh,
that's
yes.
what I was thinking
well,
about.
Canada is always a cross between the U.S. and Europe, where we're all, well, at least where I live. For instance,
yeah.
we have mostly metric, but we still have imperial.
Yeah.
I write the date American style. But,
yep.
November is actually, just to go off to a sidetrack, November is actually the 9th month in the old calendar. That's why it's November. Nina, 9. Noe is Latin for 9, I believe. So,
oh, right. I didn't even realize that. So is that Gregorian or Julian? Is that Julian calendar, is it? Or
yeah, I believe so.
Julian...
I think the Caesar added a couple months, didn't he?
Yeah, so
yeah.
He
did. Yeah, there was a point where, like, the years got so screwed up, apparently, anyway, that they They just had a year in 3 months, like, to make up for it. So, you know, they were having a feast day every day or something like that. And then they brought in the... Yeah, that makes sense now. Yeah.
Anyway, we're getting way off topic again.
Yeah.
As we do. And,
yeah,
Yeah, we're talking about abducted children in the 80s. They come up now and then. Well, the anniversaries always come up. Because there was another one literally a mile away from where I used to live. And they brought the case up that it's a cold case, a frozen cold case, where they never did find who stole this little girl. They never found her body. But one guy was accused, and it ruined his life, the accusation. But again, it's interesting to me because it was a mile away from my house that she allegedly lived and disappeared.
Yeah, right.
And I think her last name was almost the same as the guy that was accused. It was almost, there was a little bit of repetition in the story, which is confusing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, and I am more inclined to believe a story where the perpetrator, supposed perpetrator, is not revealing where the body is, because that's the only thing that, if they don't have a body, it's very difficult to prove that you commit a crime or whatever. So, if the body is not found, I am more inclined to believe the story. But if the body is found on the indication of the perpetrator, I have a really hard time believing that someone will do something that is so much against his or her interest.
Hmm. So, like, with the...
Yeah.
You remember, this one's, like, in Canada, I'm pretty sure anyway, but the guy who... He was in the army, and he was pretty high up in the Canadian army, and he was apparently just regularly raping girls, and then...
Yes, yes.
Taking his plane out or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Like,
he was supposedly the personal pilot of someone. I think that it was the Prime Minister, if I'm correct. Which was Steve Harper at the time.
Yeah, I can't remember his name right. I can see his face from the media, but I can't remember his name right this second. But the way he was caught was so... hard to believe. It was only a way that would only occur in a crime TV show, where the guy he found a tire track in the snow, and or a shoe print in the snow, and it was a very rare. It was either a rare tire or a rare shoe, and they tracked the guy from that, which is. Pretty crazy to believe.
Yeah, and then he fessed up in the interview. They got the whole interview on the internet, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
I remember watching it. Yeah. And they, like, really get him into the cornered into this position, and he starts saying, yeah, this was all me. Like, it seems a bit set up now that I think about it. I've never thought about it, but...
Yes. If you allow me, I will just read from the Wikipedia page to give a quick background on his arrest. So, 27-year-old Jessica Lloyd went missing on January 28, 2010. Investigators identified distinctive tire tracks left in snow near her home. 1 week after her disappearance, the Ontario Provincial Police, OPP, conducted an extensive canvassing of all motorists using the highway near her home from 7 p.m. on February 4, 2010 to 6 a.m. the following day, looking for the unusual tire treads. Williams was driving his Nissan Pathfinder that day rather than the BMW he usually drove, and an officer noticed the resemblance of his tire treads. They were subsequently matched to the treads near Lloyd's home. So he was arrested on February 7, but yes, like you say, it was on the basis of a resemblance of tire tracks.
Yeah.
But I figured that on Ontario, a Nissan Pathfinder is not something that is uncommon to see.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, What was it about the tire tracks? Did they have Mickey Mouse heads in them? I mean, come on. I don't think... what tire tracks are pretty similar. I know snow tires have millions of different patterns. It just seems crazy that anyone is going to be using the tire tracks.
Yes, and using the Nissan Pathfinder, it's rather stupid. I think if you are, let's say, a model that is not that common, like, let's say, Yosung, which is a Korean, not well-known brand, if you say that the guy was driving a Yosung, a special model imported from Korea or whatever, that would have been more believable. But the thing is that it's always the same tire on cars.
The Pathfinder is a pretty common vehicle, and in the winter, he probably had snow tires, and there's lots of different kinds of snow tires, and it's not always, snow is not always on the ground here, despite what people might think about Canada, where we are, it's about half, maybe a quarter of the time. February is probably snow on the ground, but just the story was just a little too cartoon-like to be believable. You know how the guy named IPS who does a podcast, he calls it Scooby-Doo Justice, where if you ever watch Scooby-Doo, the cartoon, of course the crime is committed and solved in 30 minutes because of the one little thing that the crook forgets about, and then the whole case unravels very quickly in Scooby-Doo Justice time. So that's a great phrase he's got there going. So this one was really a little too quick to make sense. But people believe it because most people watch cartoons, so they're conditioned to believe in cartoons. Yeah, that's how everything works. 22 minutes.
Yeah, people don't give it a second glance at all. Like, the bulk majority of people aren't really interested in news too hard, and when they see something like that, it's just a kind of like a pop-up story. Yeah, that got done. Move on.
Yeah. What was the guy's name? Was it Russell something?
Russell Williams.
I knew it. Okay. Russell Williams.
Russell
okay,
Williams.
Okay, well, there you go.
And he was a colonel at the time of his arrest.
Right. Colonel.
Yeah, there's pictures of him in, like, panties and a bra somewhere. I know, right? That's where they, like, clinched him on it as well. They showed him pictures of that, you know.
And it's funny that the people that choose to wear, the man that choose to wear panties and bras have a strange tendency to also like to be taken picture of inside a garment. I mean, the first part, not that I can understand, but if that's your thing, I can live with that. But why would you have your picture taken?
Yeah. Who's the picture for? Your girlfriend? I don't think any girlfriend would really want to see that, honestly. Maybe another guy if you're like that, but it's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy story, but, you know, these are the kind of stories that are made up mostly, I'm sure. It's good. It's entertaining. It's fun. It's interesting. It's different.
Well, it's like, remember that guy BTK? He apparently took pictures of himself all blind up.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
And normally, I'm on the Fart podcast at this time. I don't know if there's a Fart podcast going on now.
I don't think so. There will not be one today. I don't think so. I send an invite to the Fart guys, as I usually do when there is no show.
Yeah, well, they don't want to water down their brand by coming over here to the audio chat. That's That's they want to keep it strong. They want to keep their voices, which is good. Keep it to their podcast. That's fine. Although,
yes.
BB, it's funny you're on because I just finished listening to you on Chris's call. Chris is the hoaxmaster.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I thought it was good. I caught him at, he caught me at a good time, and I had a spare hour there, which was great.
Yeah, I didn't get a notification.
Like, yeah.
I didn't get a notification.
I don't know what happened. I think I did. I'm pretty sure, because I have no idea how I would have found it otherwise on Discord.
Yeah, me neither. Well, it wasn't on Discord, was it? He did it.
Discord? No, it was on TalkShoe.
He did it on TalkShoe.
Yeah. But someone posted it, I'm pretty sure.
Discord.
Yeah, I think he actually posted something now that I think about it. Yeah, but it kind of gets, there's a bit of chatter going on there at the moment. Yeah, he did post it, but it was hard to find. Like, he didn't post a link, he just said he was doing it. So I just went through it. So
Hoaxbuster Discord anymore for the fact that Dreamer Dave is still there, and I will not interact with people that are known liars and characterist impersonators.
I only go there because he tags me sometimes. Whenever I get tagged, I go over to whoever's tagging me and see what's going on. That's a pretty useful feature in Discord, tagging people.
Yes.
I think that's one of the more interesting features across Twitter and Facebook. Because how can you keep track of all these things unless people are pinging you? And most of the time, it's not. It is interesting. You can't ping on WordPress, which I use to generate fakeologist.com, but they should put it in somehow where you can ping people and say you've been mentioned, or mentions. It would be useful. I don't think
they develop
WordPress very well anymore.
Yeah, even the app is pretty much non-functional from what I gathered.
For what?
And for WordPress. I remember I had it for a little bit, and I was like, oh, I'll just use the website.
No, they still work on it. It's publishing. It still works.
Okay.
I use it for my phone, but there's a lot of functionality they can build in that they haven't done anything with.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What did you think of the call, anyway?
I did not have the chance to listen to it, but it's on my cell phone, and I will listen to it later.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it was good to hear his voice.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about CO2. We talked about a murder in my town that happened a year ago. Well, a supposed murder. And how fishy that kind of seems. Climate change, that. And then I had to wrap it up. But, yeah, it was a good call.
Yes, did he mention that he intended to have something more regular, or was it just a quick comeback?
Yeah, I think every Monday at, I had it up just before, 8 Central Time, so you'll do call around then.
Yes, excellent. I did listen to an insane amount of audio of this guy and Chris Kendall.
Oh, yeah. I thought they did big audios, and then I was looking at Fakeologist audio chat, so I was like, whoa, it's like 10-hour recordings there and stuff, oh my god.
Yes, you know? But let's say that if it's a general discussion, that freedom can be held for a long while, but if you are concentrated on one specific topic, if there is point that you want to address, if you... I will give you an example. I recorded with Gaia something insane about the moon landing, and the first episode was 6 hours long. And recording 6 hours with a schedule, with a talking point and a program in front of you, and the insane amount of data that you get to go through and everything, it's exhausting. But light chatting about different subjects, you can do that for an insane amount of hours without... it being too taxing, let's say.
Yeah, definitely. I'm halfway through that recording. It's pretty good. Yeah, and something like the moon as well, you know. Yeah, That's just endless. But yeah, you guys really covered that pretty good so far anyway. Some of the best stuff out there, I reckon.
But it's great that that he's back, and it's great that he's decided to record on a regular basis, because I always enjoy listening to him, and I don't really care about the polemic of the earlier days, like this carry-on thing or whatever. As far as I don't really give any attention to that, to be honest.
Although it'll be nice to hear John explain the whole thing again. That would be fun.
Did he explain it to Faye? Is that where I can listen to that? Because I've never heard it.
I don't think he explained it to anybody.
Oh, okay.
I don't really think that he has to, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's not something I feel is really needed. I could live without him addressing this story ever again.
It's just...
But I know that some members here are still convinced that the guy is deliberately lying and whatever. It's not my case.
Mm.
Yes. Who knows? It's just soap opera material in a way, but I know Unreal is super passionate about it. Unreal has done more investigation on that, so maybe for his sake he'd like to hear if he can get his theories confirmed.
Yes, and as much as I can enjoy Unreal Research, let's say that the guy has a suspicious mind at the very least.
Oh, yes. Can you speak, did you ever speak French to Unreal?
Only on text.
Oh, okay.
But his French is impressive, to say the least.
Yeah, well, he's Norwegian.
Yes.
But he's been in Paris a long time, I guess.
I cannot say if he still is or not, but at least I can confirm that he's a very, very good French writer.
Yeah, it's funny because Fakeologists has been going for a while, and at the beginning we had a lot of Norwegians, which is fascinating. Now we don't hear anything. We had Simon, of course, who was Norwegian, and of course he's in Italy. And we had Jan Erik, Norwegian.
I heard that Master Fake Theater one with you and him and Chris, I think it was, yeah.
Chris? I love him. He's disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
I did hear from him once, but he told me not to disclose where he was, but he's not in Norway anymore, I can say that much. But I only heard from him once. And then, of course, Unreal is Norwegian. And I can't think of anyone right now, anyone else who's from Norway, but Norway has gone silent.
That we are missing. Yes.
But it's Norway has gone silent in the conspiracy world or on the fakeology world. Norway is now not represented.
Yes, but the fact is that their big event, let's say, that might bring a lot of people on this side of the issue. It's now an event that is 8 years old, and it's the Utøya Island shooting by...
It's
probably absolutely not real character Anders Breivik.
Yeah, they haven't had anything recently, now they're out of it. Out of scrubbed the conspiracy of YouTube. Research.
But you could find at one point a hilarious video of Anders Breivik in court, where the cops that are bearing him are glitching, and they have some arms that are appearing and disappearing from the footage. So, hilarious thing that the trial of this guy was.
Yes, there were some defects in the video. I don't even know if they have video in Norwegian courts or not. But yeah, there were some issues that were interesting. So who is he? Is he an actor, of course, or is he a simulated actor? I don't know.
Is he a real person, even? I mean, in the sense, is this guy not CGI from start to beginning?
Well, I don't...
You just take someone that is like a resembling silhouette, you put a sweater on his head, and you're walking from a car to the court, and it's done. People will say, yes, but there is real footage of that guy. You see, he's walking on the street between two cops and with a sweater on his head. For example.
Mm. Yeah, I think there was parallels between that and the New Zealand thing, the mosque hoax. definitely. They're all killed out.
I think there were more. There were more parallels with the Martin Bryant thing in Tasmania. That was carbon copy.
Oh, yeah,
in so many
ways.
Oh, like the outcome with the whole rolling out weapons legislation and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
You talk about that.
Well,
yeah.
more the isolated nature of the location in Tasmania is completely isolated.
True.
There's no way, one road in and one road out, and completely controlled environment and geography. It's perfect for a phony event for sure. And Natoya was on an island. How the hell could you? Come on, nobody could get there unless they were part of the plan.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
But like I said, it was 2011 in Switzerland. The last, and as far as I know, only mass shooting we ever had was in 2001 when some irate citizen took upon himself to shoot the parliament in the canton of Zug, if I am correct. That's the only mass shooting of Switzerland, but it's an old event. It's 2001. And I really lack the German-speaking knowledge to research it well enough, let's say.
Yeah, right.
And how many people died?
Oh, I will tell you that right now, but it's not a massive shooting. Don't expect something like 50.
Because I would like to... was that in your federal parliament or a state or provincial parliament?
No. It was a local parliament of a small region.
A canton?
Yes.
You have cantons, right? Is that what...
Exactly.
You have cantons. Is that your state or provinces, cantons?
Yes, exactly. That's how they are called. But there are some specificity because, like I said on the earlier audio chat, the place I am in, Geneva, is not only a canton, but it's named République et Canton de Genève. So République and Canton of Genève. And that's the only place in Switzerland that is claiming the name République. So.
Yeah. What does that mean?
I really don't know why they choose to add that specificity. But to come back on that shooting, the Zug massacre took place on 27 September 2001 in the city of Zug, in the canton's parliament. Friedrich Laibacher shot dead 14 people before killing himself.
Yeah.
And
what kind
one.
Of people was he shooting? Who was he shooting at? Anyone in particular or just whoever stood up?
He killed 3 members of the council and 11 members of the legislature and wounded 18 politicians. Oh, it was a nice shooter. He fired 91 rounds. He then ignited an ordinary bomb. 91, yes. In September 2001 at that.
Okay, well, here's one. We had a parliamentary shooting in the Quebec legislature.
Yes, and if you add the dead and the wounded, it made 33.
Oh, perfect. Well, again, because we look for patterns worldwide, we had a shooting in the parliament in Quebec in and around the same time. Do you want to look that one up? But this guy lined up all the women and just shot women, and they made a whole big case about violence against women and crazy guys. That I don't know if he shot himself in the head too, 2 bullet shots to the head, or I don't know what happened to this guy. I forget.
When was this?
Yeah,
the École Polytechnique. Was it
that's
that?
It. Okay.
Okay.
Well, yeah, okay, did he shoot a parliament or he went into a school? I forget now.
No, a school, the École Polytechnique.
What year was that?
You check that out. It was in 1989, the 6th of December. It was 15 deaths, 14 by gunfire and 1 stabbing and 14 injuries. The perpetrator was named Mark Klepin.
What happened to him, though? Did he shoot himself, or...?
Yes. Targeting... Okay, so... I will read. It's easier to read than to take the small bite. So on December 6, 1989, Marc Lépine entered a mechanical engineering class at the École Polytechnique and ordered the women and men to opposite side of the classroom. He separated 9 women, instructing the men to leave. He stated that he was fighting feminism and opened fire. He shot all of 9 women in the room, killing 6. Lépine then moved through corridors, the cafeteria, and another classroom, targeting women for just under 20 minutes before turning the gun on himself. It is the deadliest mass shooting in Canadian history.
Alright, yeah. Did he die of 2 shots to the head? That always makes me laugh. They shoot with, yes. Gets 2 shots in his own head because the first one didn't work. Don't read
the
shit? 2 shots
point.
To the head?
No. But on a technical point, there is a possibility to get more than one bullet into one's cranium by self-inflicted wound. And it only takes an assault rifle set on burst mode, and you just push the trigger once and 3 bullets go out. So if said rifle is directed to one's head, you will have the possibility to shot 3 bullets into your brain. Or at least
but that
two,
would be
because
a fully,
probably...
That would be...
Yes.
That would be a machine gun. That's a fully automatic... There's no such thing as a fully automatic rifle, is there?
Yes,
no.
Of course.
A fully automatic rifle? No.
It's called an assault rifle in that case. But,
I think that's a machine gun. A machine gun, you can just hold the trigger and let it loose. I don't think there's any rifle that you can hold the trigger and it. No. An assault rifle, I don't. You have to look. I'm not into guns, so I don't know. But.
So I cannot say because the terminology was, of course, in French or in German, but Sturmgewehr or fusil d'assaut, which means assault rifle. Is something that I had as a soldier in the Swiss Army when I was doing my time. And the thing is that we had a full auto mode. We had a single shot mode. We had burst mode that I mentioned. 3 cartridges are ejected. And then you get the full auto mode.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry. You know more than I do then.
Oh, I don't really know much. The only thing I can say is of experience. But the fact is that an assault rifle is a selective fire rifle that to use an intermediate cartridge and a detachable magazine. So apparently, it's that. But I think that it's more in the rate of fire that the difference between a machine gun and an assault rifle might be.
Okay. Well, we had another shooting in Quebec. We had a legislature shooting, so maybe since you're so good at looking stuff up, look that one up. I think it was about the same time.
Do you remember when that last shooting happened? Like what year it was, Ab?
What, the Polytechnique?
The
That was 89.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah. I'm wondering when, like, the inception of these mass shootings was.
What was the first? I don't know. Texas University shooter, maybe. The Texas sniper. Anyway, what you were mentioned, Ab, did happen in 1984. Denis Lortie is a former Canadian Force Corporal. In 1984, he stormed into the National Assembly and Quebec building and opened fire with several firearms, killing 3 Quebec government employees and wounding 13 others. The National Assembly Sergeant at Arms, René Jalbert, volunteered himself to serve as an hostage and conversed with Lortie for several hours before convincing him to surrender to authorities. After a 1985 conviction of first-degree murder was overturned by the Quebec Court of Appeal, Lortie pleaded guilty to reduced charge of second-degree murder in 1987, for which he was convinced and sentenced to life imprisonment with no parole for 10 years.
Wow.
Lortie was granted day parole in 1995, then full parole in 1996, and has since kept a low profile.
Wow. Well, you didn't kill that guy off. Okay, so he's wandering around.
Yes.
He'd be a great interview, wouldn't he?
Oh, yes. If the guy is still alive, but don't know if he was really willing to speaking about the day he supposedly wanted to shot the Premier Minister of Quebec.
So that's our parliament shooting. See, there mm-hmm. there are patterns, I suppose, is what I was, that's what I was getting at.
Yes, and a lot of those events in the mid-80s around Canada. Child disappearance, shooting.
Yeah. Things have really calmed down since. We haven't had anything exciting.
Yes. We only had one, and it was, like I said, in 2001, and most of the information are in German, so I really like the German knowledge and, let's say, the envy to dig too much into this story. But yes, that's the one and only mass shooting that ever happened in Switzerland, and it didn't really at the time change the law on weapons, but since then the law has changed a bit. But we still are one of the more relaxed European countries about gun owning.
Is it true you guys are allowed to keep the weapons that you were given in...
Yes.
When you... Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, but the thing is that you get to conform to certain obligations, and when my time of service was over, and when I mean over, I was never to be called again to do one day in the army. I don't really wanted to continue to do that. But what you had to do is that at the stops, when you finished boot camp, you were to enroll into a shooting society and go there once a year to participate in some shootings and your reflex tight. So, as you can imagine, the crowd that you can find at shooting society is not the more open-minded and, the most interesting of crowd. So I rather not go into one of those, even if it was to keep the assault rifle, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
The thing is that you get to keep the assault rifle, but it's the fully auto and the burst mode. The burst mode you can still access, but the fully auto mode is locked. They put in some sort of metal pin into the rifle, and it's illegal to remove it or whatever. And so the fully auto capacity you don't have anymore, even if you keep the weapon.
Yeah.
But even if you don't have the capacity to shoot full auto, I mean, if you squeeze the trigger quick enough with the burst mode, the firepower is there anyway.
Yeah, it's pretty useful, I guess. Yeah.
So what we've revealed similarities and patterns across the nations between events.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes, the guy that stormed the parliament and started shooting around.
Yeah, we had another parliament shooter in our federal parliament. I think it was a few years ago, and the sergeant of arms, again, was a central player in this phony baloney case in Ottawa. That's our capital. I don't know if you... I can't remember the name of that one, but the guy was the sergeant of arms who was the hero. I don't know exactly what he did, but he became ambassador of Ireland, which is a pretty good paying position where you can obviously enjoy yourself at being an ambassador, which is just basically in charge of the cocktail circuit in Ireland.
Yeah, what, they'd sit on maybe 150 grand, you know.
Is it possible that it happened in 2014?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So the guy was also a corporal in the Canadian Army. So apparently, if you are a corporal in the Canadian Army, you have a propensity to start shooting people.
Yes, that's right. It's all to enhance the believability of the story. Figure, well, everybody that is in the Army has some form of PTSD, so... they're mentally ill, and once they're out or were in or still in, they're nuts, and they have access to weapons. So, yeah, it's a believable story. That's why I suppose they do it.
Mm. Now, it seems like the parliament shootings are, there's been like three or four in Canada, from what you're saying. More? Seems like it's good. Yeah.
That's two that I know. That's two. The Quebec legislature and then the federal.
Yes, so that one, there is no mention of the sergeant at arms, but the fact is that he chose to shot Corporal Nathan Cirillo of the Argyle and Sutherland Islanders of Canada. Princess Louise is in commas also. So that I think that it's the regiment that at that time was guarding the premise.
Yeah, I didn't even think we had anyone guarding our parliament. I think that was part of the story, that there's no security. No
I
real
don't really
security
think that
in
those
the parliament.
Guy, yes. Okay, so.
Yeah.
It's on the Wikipedia page. So he approached Caporal Cirillo, who was one of three sentries from the ceremonial guard. Okay? Posted at the tomb of the unknown soldiers. Soldier, I'm sorry. At close range, Zehaf Bibo shot Cirillo twice in the back. So I don't know if they were really having weapons, because the story is that this guy starting shooting at them and they instantly flee across the monument or the building. So apparently there is no mention of them shooting back in any way or trying to fight back the assailant. So as far as I know, those guys did probably not have any weapon on them at the time.
No, yeah, it was ceremonial means that they're just standing there. They got no. That just means they're just standing there as for window dressing. They're not. So I'm sure now whoever's there has a weapon, and there's probably airport security to get in there now. I mean, I think that's the main intention, is to fortify all these public places with lots of security equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went to the hockey game here. Hockey's our big sport here. And airport security for the hockey arenas. That came in a few years ago.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, I went to a market the other day, just a food market. There was so much police there. It's insane. I was like, wow, what is going on here?
Oh.
You know?
Well, are they buying vegetables or are they patrolling?
They're patrolling, yeah. But, you know, a dozen?
Yeah, is that a gun in your pocket or is it a banana? You know?
Yeah, it was just insane. I was just picking up some mussels and I was like, what in the world are you guys doing here at, I think it was like 2 p.m.? Shouldn't you be out, like, solving crime? Isn't there rubbish they can pick up? You know,
all the crimes on TV, they'd have to jump into the TV to solve it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So with the serial killer thing, that was just for making people on edge. But this mass shooting one is an infrastructure thing.
Well, all phony crime is to keep people on edge.
Right.
All of it. That's all. There's always, in my mind, multiple reasons for all of these things.
Mm.
But to keep the tension in the air, to keep crime top of mind, to keep people in fear, mainly it's to really keep people distracted from maybe some real events, maybe that they're losing more autonomy and more money out of their wallets, mainly.
Mm.
And to keep the police
and also
budget
the
high.
Yes, the fact is that also it's pretty easy to, if you fabricate an event, to control the end of said event. So you can say we catch the perpetrator. Like you mentioned, the BTK guy, and this guy got caught, I think the story is that 30 years later, or something like that. So they can control the narrative in that sense. And I don't watch TV anymore, but I remember that when I was still browsing through the channel, there was an insane amount of cops TV show that were all there to tell me that if I ever were to strangle my wife for some reason or whatever, I will be caught. There is no way I will escape that, but the fact is that the real murders, the real story, I think many of the perpetrators get away, and They only promote the one that they control the outcome of, so they can say, okay, we catch the guy. Justice has been served.
Yeah. Yeah, like the ones that have happened here, the big thing has been that they track the guy across the city with CCTV. Like, for hours on end, they've just got this footage, and it's like, this is the footage, everyone watch it, you know, so... yeah, at least the last two supposed murders that happened here, they were all CCTV driven, and and then they both had like a whole women's, where the women are safe kind of thing to it,
yes,
tagged on at the end, you know. And,
although I will not give the impression that I believe that each and every sordid incident you can find in the media is fake, because I know of at least one person that got shot in real life, and it was heavily mentioned in the media at the time. So of course I will not give the impression that we are believing that each and every crime that is reported is not true, but I believe that I think that some of the more iconic one, the one that you can clearly see that they are designed to steer the opinion one way or another, to traumatize people, to get them to, yes, be suspicious of one another and be worried of strangers. While apparently it is proven that you are more at risk to get your children molested or hurt in one way or another by family member or those close to you than strangers, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But that could also be the case, that it's drive more further the people from the family cell, more away.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I mean, the hoax events are like, they're intrinsically tied to the media. There's stuff that you hear, and it's just known about town, maybe. A little bit more, but with the media-driven stuff, there's an obvious message there. I mean, with the one that happened last year in Melbourne, it got linked to vaccines because the guy who killed the girl was an autistic, apparently. You know, it's just like, what in the world, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting how the serial killers have just dropped off, and they're just like either one-hit wonders or the mass
shooters. Well, it was a theme of the day in the 70s and the 80s, and Miles Mathis, who I promote on my site, one of the things he said about it is he said, today in this Scooby-Doo justice culture, this Instagram, this YouTube culture, this TikTok culture where we watch things for 10 seconds and then we move on to the next 10-second video, we don't have time for a serial killer story. We can't wait months to catch the guy. We can't wait for the next victim. We don't have time. They don't have the same punch anymore. We need our information immediately, and those stories are too slow, so they wouldn't get any traction. So that's another reason why we really can't have a fake serial killer story today. We had a serial killer story in Toronto, I believe last year or the year before, that got no traction at all. Now, this guy was supposedly a typically disaffected white male in his 50s, my age, that was preying upon homosexual men. That was the story. And then he was a landscaper, so he took him home, and he buried him in his backyard, or the backyard of his customers. Because, God forbid, you watch your landscaper dragging a body into your backyard and planting him under the new shrubs. Yeah, you would never notice that, sure. Okay. But that was the story we were sold. And the story got no interest. None. They made it as crazy as possible. Nobody cared about it. Nobody I knew talked about it. No traction. Story began, ended pretty quickly. They were just throwing bodies into the story. Oh, this guy, that guy, this guy. All over the place. No attention at all. In other words, fail. Fail Army on this one, guys. It was so phony that you could tell they were not putting money or any kind of detail into it. It was a fail. So, more proof that it doesn't work anymore, or people don't care.
Yes, but also the story tends to be long-winding. I mean, you get supposedly those guys killing people for 20 years on end and disappearing. Don't think that it really fits the attention span of today. People want more quick action. And the guy has to go on the rampage.
Are there real murders? Yeah, I believe there are. Are homosexual men more likely to get murdered because of their lifestyle and because they're marginalized in society and maybe they're engaged in very dangerous drug activity combined with their sexual culture? Yeah, maybe. Maybe they are killed. Maybe they are, and maybe these crimes go unsolved because without direct testimony, you can't convict people very easily. And maybe their community is more secretive and therefore less likely to testify because they might be closeted individuals. So maybe if we invent a serial killer to help solve all these crimes and put them away, maybe that's just a tool to wrap up a case that otherwise would never be solved. I don't know. That's a possibility, too.
Yeah. It's a convenient way to say that he's one individual in the society and to give a certain sense of people that, yes, you have to be afraid and worried because they are everywhere. They could be anyone. But it's only one guy on 100,000 or 1 or 10 million, whatever. So be worried, but... It's a message about human nature. Human nature is not that bad. We only get some rotten apples.
Hello.
But the serial killer stories are...
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Have you ever questioned the nature of your reality?
Yes, we have, all the time. Yeah, Jairus, your audio is a little low. I don't know if you can speak louder.
Yes, is it better that way?
I should have mentioned that earlier. I can hear you, but... You need to be as loud as BB, and I don't know if I'm loud.
Okay, is it better that way?
Yeah, that would be better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, better. It might be time to invest in some better material, but step by step.
Yeah.
This headset did the work.
Maybe buy a laptop like Chris did. And that way you can do better, more research. And he has it tethered to his phone as well. That's what he said in his last call.
Oh, really? Yeah, right. His voice is pretty good through it.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Yes, but with the good headset, you can use your cell phone and have a totally decent audio quality.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
I mean, I'm using a pretty good microphone here, and, I mean, it's a little bit better, that's for sure, you know, but...
I'm using something pretty basic.
How did you call into the talk show, BB? How did you call in?
Just on my PC. Yeah, I just called in through the PC. Through the TalkShoe site.
What number?
I didn't call in on a number. I just connected through the net. Yeah, talk shoe's all different now.
I don't know talk shoe now. How did you do it?
I just went
on to have an account.
I didn't even need to do that. I just set up a like a guest account and just logged on onto Hoaxbusters Calls server and just was in the chat and the call at the same time. Like you log on and you're just on the call muted. That's what I found anyway. But I never called a number. It was just connect through the net.
So you didn't have to install any software?
No, just ran it. Yeah, straight through Firefox. Okay. My other browser didn't like it, but through Firefox. Yeah, and just connected a mic through the PC like I'm doing now.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So
no software
required.
No software. Oh yeah, they've upgraded. Okay. Chris said he had to he had audio problems at the start, and he had to figure that out. But he was saying that TalkShoe's changed a lot, so he's got to figure out how to do all that stuff because he couldn't play music or something. I don't know, something like that.
Yes.
Okay.
I did remember that distinctive TalkShoe just before we started each and every time.
Yeah. With Marcus Allen.
Yes, with Marcus Allen.
It does sound like him, you know. But yeah, that was. I'm surprised you just didn't go on Discord, but you know, you use what you're familiar with. You can call in. So what? People just call in over the phone? Is that how it works back in the day?
I don't really know. I think so. But at one point, it was the case.
Yeah. Okay.
But for that type of things, Discord is at the moment, at least, and that I know of, the best option.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
There is no going getting around that. Discord is the best one to contact people, to make connection between individual, and for the longest time, the Hoaxbuster Call Discord was semi dead. But you did mention that there was some activity there currently.
Yeah, just a bit of drama and that kind of thing. Someone called the Fakeologist YouTube's been posting there a lot, and Dreamer Dave, and everyone's bitching. It's good that something's happening.
It's good that it's living, but...
Yeah, definitely.
Like I said, I rather refrain from exchanging with certain set of individuals that
that
I can prove are dishonest.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's no. I decide not to either.
Yes, but I also try to keep away from that tendency that people have on those circles to stay in their little nest or niche and only. Keep there with their set of individual intent to roll into a circle. So I try to keep in contact with other circles and try to blend in and bring some people here from here and there and further the discussion because that will be a closed circuit at one point, you know. That's a tendency I did identify in those type of people.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So you can get a lot of new people by promoting Fakeologists or whatever, but get people to really stay on for a longer time and participate on a more active basis. It's really depending on if they choose to go to be a part of that circle or one another, but people are really, really community driven, let's say.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I haven't been here long. I'm definitely liking it. I think it's a great service platform that you guys have got here. In the real world, I try to stay away from that stuff, like community gardens and stuff. I think we were talking about that, actually. But, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but, I don't know, community stuff, it just always... It naturally has a tendency to be sectarian after a while, I guess, to some extent, like fringe stuff, so to speak.
Yes, but
John LeBron is in the audience tonight. I guess he's listening in Hanoi. I do listen to most of John's stuff, and he just put a YouTube up, just a 2 or 3 hour chat that was pretty good. I almost posted it, but I forgot. But I think I might post it. It's worth a listen, where he's just going over many, many different subjects from his bed and breakfast in Hanoi, Vietnam. Worth a listen, so I'll give him a plug. John's nice to me, so I'll be nice back to him.
Yes, so everyone, if you are interested in John LeBron's work, you can find him at johnlebron.com. And he also has a YouTube channel, which I presume is named John LeBron.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Are you familiar with John LeBron, BB?
Only a little bit familiar. I watched Climbing Mount Thankology. I listened to a few of his YouTube videos and stuff. Ancient Egypt one. I don't know, it's pretty, I can't say I'm like fully hooked, but I thought it was like pretty, I wanted to watch more, put it that way. You know, finding out that I didn't realize.
Your neck of the, I think he's from your area.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think he's from Brisbane, maybe.
I think he's from Melbourne.
Oh, is he really? Yeah. Like, he's got a similar accent.
He lived in Brisbane. He lived mm-hmm. in Brisbane, but...
Oh, yeah.
From Melbourne.
I think he's from southeast Melbourne, but, yeah.
You guys are almost the same age, too, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm 31. I think he's...
I'm 35. And he's 32, as far as I know.
Yeah. Now, that might get your buddy in G Long there, an ounce of salt. He might think you're the same person. So unless we have John come on the call right now, I'm worried Frank is going to have a total you are this guy meltdown.
Yeah, people have said that I sound like him. And I think, I heard his last fakeologist audio chat, and he said something about southeast Melbourne, so maybe he's from there.
Yes, I remember him mentioning Melbourne in some conversation that we had. But...
Mm.
Yeah.
But
you
what,
have a
now
beard and a beanie?
No, I don't. I actually can't grow a beard. I get pimples and shit.
Oh.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Sorry about that. You're too old to have pimples.
Yeah, I know, man. It's crazy.
even more suspicious. You have pimples.
Mm. Well, I've actually got a
big... trust people with pimples.
I got a big sucker, like, right underneath. Right at my goatee, where my goatee would be right now. And I got my son's baptism tomorrow, so I'm going to look great for photos. Maybe I'll just Photoshop those photos. Yeah. It's not going to look great.
Or you can go the makeup way.
All right, whenever the conversation goes kind of quiet, we need to go to the blog and pull something up.
Yes. That's an excellent method. So, fakeologies.com it is.
Yeah, so we got something. How did they simulate Nicole Brown Simpson?
Yes.
Nice blog entry by Mark.
Yes, so before we go to the blog itself, I just wanted, because John LeBron took the time to say something on the live stream chat, apparently don't read his...
Oh, that's where it was. Okay. Okay.
Yes. So he say, I grew up in Cranbourne, moved to Brisbane, age 23. Yep, I'm 32. Cranbourne. So He wanted me to ask you about the Cranbourne suburb. Cranbourne. Not the easiest one to say for me. Cranbourne.
Yeah, Cranbourne. Well, that's out east. All I can think of is dog races. They've got dog races out there, like greyhounds and that kind of thing. I presume it's a crummy suburb. everything. Yeah, they race greyhounds. There you go. Yeah. It's a shithole. That's what he says it is. Yeah. I remember going through it. It's nice weather all year round. So. But that's about it. That's all it's got going for it. I didn't see snow until I was like 20. So. I saw snow, I was like, wow. Yeah, Melbourne used to be hot in the 90s, and then it turned into like overcast, cold weather all the time. But yeah.
Maybe that's a chemtrail.
Yeah, I don't think it is, but I was thinking about it the other day, because there were like trails everywhere going across the sky, but
I'm not a big chemtrail guy. That was more sarcasm.
Yeah. I think maybe like America might have a bit more with weather manipulation in parts of Asia, but cloud seed. Yeah, like cloud seeding's real, but the question is there constant trails out there that people can see? Is that the weather modification that's going on?
The question is, are they spraying to kill us? Which is insane.
Oh, okay. With silver colloid.
Barium and all those things.
Those people are using the same air, so.
We don't need cloud seeding here. We have the Gulf Stream that brings the moisture up from the Gulf of Mexico up the Appalachians and dumps it into our largest freshwater basin in the entire world. I don't think we need any extra rain here. Yeah, we can go a few weeks without rain, which is really nice, but we have tons of precipitation here. I don't think anyone needs to drive their plane up and start dropping chemicals. We don't need it here.
Yeah, and Toronto's quite humid as well, right? Am I right with that?
Yeah, we have lots of humidity. It's bone-chilling in the winter, and it's stifling hot in the summer when the humidity is high. Tons of moisture. We live on a lake that is part of more lakes, that is part of thousands of lakes. All our roads and cities are designed around water. Rivers, lakes, you name it. We got more water than anyone could want or need.
Yeah.
So we don't need to feed our clouds here. No way. Never.
Does it rain much in the summer?
No, we have a couple. No, the summer's usually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
We can have some downpours at night when the sun goes down and all the moisture in the air needs to come down. Yeah, we can have some nice violent thunderstorms. I enjoy those. Deluges. But they don't last. We have some pretty good summers. We don't have enough hot days, though. This year, we only had about 5 days over 30, which sucks. Because that's not enough to heat the lake so you can go swimming in it. You need some real stinkers to get the lake temperature up.
Yeah, I put my hand in the water. I put my hand in the water, like Lake Ontario, whatever it's called, and it was pretty cold.
Yeah.
That was February. I think it was, Canada's the coldest I've ever been. That was, I think, minus 11 or something, and I could hardly even see when I was walking home. It was fair enough. It was like 4 a.m., but anyway. Yeah.
Our Lake Ontario is frozen cold. Right until probably September, which then the air becomes cold. So it's a really small window which with you can enjoy the beach. It's, You've only got a couple of weeks. I would say a month or 2 months. I once swam in October when we had a hot day in October. I once went in the water. I recorded that because I figured I'm not going to do that much. But that was fun. Swimming in October. Very bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, but they don't open the pools here till December, pretty much. So, I mean, we had a 38-degree day the other day, and they still don't open them up. Anyway.
Oh, well, 38's bloody hot.
Yeah, man, yeah. Yeah, and they didn't open those suckers up. I went down there, and the indoor pools were all open. I'm like, what's going on? I want to get cold.
Yeah, so we were speaking about the main blog that I am watching at the instant, and the first thing is, oh, they simulate Nicole Brown Simpson, which is about the O.J. Simpson case, but it's not that interesting, at least for me. The next one is Chris from Oxbuster test the new saddle. So that one we already did mention. And the other one is 56 years ago today, because yesterday it was the 56th anniversary of the Kennedy supposed assassination.
Yeah.
So that's the
Did anyone of your generation care about that?
Don't think so. I really don't think so. Nobody really cares. No. At least each and everyone that know of the event, because I might even be ready to think that 30 years on... don't really know about this event. Each and everyone is thinking that the guy was really killed on that day. But people that are interested in history, let's say, but normal, how can I say that? No, yes, normal history, would think that it's a conspiration. Not that much people are thinking that it's this poor guy, Lee Harvey Oswald, on his own. But interestingly enough, the guy that is that was at least defending that theory was Vincent Bugliosi.
If you want to encourage more audios like these, please go to Fakeologist.com and click the Patreon button under the Donate section. For $1.19 a month, you can call yourself a verified listener. And for $9.11 a month, a benefactor who will get a shout out every time Ab does a show. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, thanks to the lone Patreon, John LeBond, who's here now. Nobody else has subscribed to that. I still have a few guys on PayPal. I want to thank all of them who subscribed. PayPal gives me a little more money than Patreon would, I guess. But thank you very much to the PayPal subscribers. I even have a few 9/11 subscribers. One of them is Adam Wood. I think that's his name. I don't think he's on the blog or on the Discord, but his name is Adam, I think his name. That could be his real name. I don't know if it is. I'm outing you. I'm sorry. But his name is Adam for sure. So thank you very much for supporting. I have a couple of those guys.
Yes, and you are still my lone Patreon subscriber.
Yeah, I'm paying it forward, huh?
Yes. Yes. It's funny enough because I support you, you support me. It's the way it is in the end.
Well, yeah, you gotta start somewhere. You can't have none.
Yes.
The only thing I would suggest is you might want to just switch your name on Patreon to say Jairus. Something easy. Your name is a little too big and too many letters, Friday audio chat, especially if you do it on Saturdays. But I think you can change that, probably.
Oh, yes, clearly. But, yes, it's a work in progress. Yes, and my first idea was to somehow depersonalize it, but since it's my Patreon, yes, it might make sense to that it reference me a little bit more. Name-wise.
Yeah, just make it easy. I'm more thinking make it easy. Make it easy for everybody to figure it out. Jairus, G-E-R-I-S.
Yes, or even Frack, which doesn't really exist anymore for some reason. But it is what it is. There is less people to interact with me on those dates and at those times. So I'm
adapting. Well, the thing that works really well to get people to the site is Reddit. You're going to have to go to Reddit and put a hook in there. John LeBond does it all the time, and anytime John puts a link to the site, I get a big boost. So
yes.
Go to Reddit and start fishing. That's what I'd recommend.
Yes. But to be honest, the more promotion and time that I will spend into it will be after February, let's say. Because those winter months, I get to set up the travel to Colombia. I have so many things to take care about. The heavy research work and the episode that will be more research-driven will come. I think that by February, March, it will resume as it was a few months back, let's say. So yes, the JFK supposed assassination, there are still people that are defending the Warren Commission theory that this guy was shot by one person only. And I think that it's all a smokescreen and think that it was established that this guy just disappeared from the public scene and most probably was not killed, at least on that day.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the body, isn't there a picture of the body in the morgue? It's just not JFK. I don't think so anyway. And that was, I'm pretty sure that was off of Mathis' paper, like one of his big ones that I read. It's just a conspiracy, like goldmine JFK, isn't it, though, eh?
Yes, it made some people careers, even, in that small world.
Yeah, there's something that I remember recently was I'll try and find it now. There was a conspiracy book written by an Australian ex detective, and he wrote a conspiracy angle to this book, but his end conclusion was something that wasn't a conspiracy, which was someone killed JFK. A gun went off in the front and shot him that way. That was his end conclusion thing.
So something like the driver?
The driver had like a gun stowed away and that gun went off and killed him. I know, it's ridiculous, you know. And it was like famed, it was given mainstream media attention and it was famed as he's finally solved it, the lone Australian detective kind of thing. I'll try and find like a small synopsis.
I remember really seeing something of that nature. At least the theory might have been around for longer than that. The fact that, it was the driver that shot him. But the funny thing is that there is always an angle with the JFK story. In France, there was this guy, I don't remember the name, but his angle was that JFK was killed by a French assassination team brought in by the CIA. So they will always try to link it with one country or one specific regional place or whatever.
One thing you can say for sure is JFK was one of the most well-developed psyops ever because they had every possible alternative theory out there that you could even dream of.
Mm.
But the one that stuck the most is the magic bullet, which is completely ridiculous. But that's the one that stuck the best with people. They thought, oh, yeah, the bullet made a left turn and a right turn, and it took out all kinds of guys, and it's stupid, but that's what people believe. So this is also indicating how crazily stupid people are. That's what it means. Mm-hmm. So the people that make these events must just go nuts thinking, oh, my goodness, I can't believe that people buy this story, but this is great news because the next story we put out, we can really be very sloppy or very silly and it'll still go through.
Mm.
Maybe we'll tell people we went to the moon after this. Let's tell people we went to the moon. Let's see if that one sticks.
Yeah.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's a good one.
It sticks.
Yes. Anyway, I will have to go because it's been going on 2 hours and I had some things to attend. But it has been a pleasure and I will not forget to pull Craig out with when everyone has left the room. So have a nice day, guys.
Well, thank you very much for coming by.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's always a pleasure. And I will try to keep listening via the website, but I will not forget to pull Craig out when everything is over. Have a nice day. Bye.
Thank you.
All right.
Did you want to read? I'm driving, so I can't read everything in the live stream chat. But if you want to read, I'll read quickly while I'm at a red light. It says, Unreal says, Leslie Perot's accent is very peculiar. She speaks as if she hides her natural voice accent. Interesting. That was going back an hour.
Well, where was that person from as well? Leslie Parrott, that is?
Who? Unreal? Well, she lived in Toronto, but she sounded South African to me. I think she might have said she was.
Oh, really? Yeah, I sense like an English accent. I know that South African accents can be a little bit similar in some regards.
Well, yeah. Well, there are British down there, and Dutch, it's very similar.
Yeah, there was definitely some peculiarity. Yeah.
That was a recent video they played. I remember the one from the 80s, so her accent would have been thicker in the 80s probably because she would have just come to Toronto probably.
That is strange. I mean, you don't just have an international accent straight away. Like, it screamed international accent to me, if you know what I mean by that. Like, you just
well,
got
I don't
parts
think
of everywhere.
There's nothing strange about her accent to me. I deal with a million accents. This is Toronto. We're a very worldwide city. Are you doing? Worldwide city here. So we get people from everywhere.
Yeah, right. I'm sure lots of
South Africans came here because South Africa was already sinking in the 80s for sure. In the chaos.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. We got a lot of South African refugees here. Mainly in Perth. And so does New Zealand as well. Yeah, they just kind of, everyone left that country in the 80s. But
yeah, anyone who could leave left. I would guess if you had a farm, though, I'm sure a lot of the white farmers stayed until they got shot.
Yeah. Have you read much into that? That whole thing?
Into what?
Into the farmers being persecuted?
Well, there was a movie that I haven't watched it yet, by a Canadian alternative journalist named Lauren Southern. I gave her $20. And she something about the state-sanctioned persecution of the white farmers. Where basically, it went along the lines of Zimbabwe, where once Rhodesia collapsed and they handed the government over to the majority blacks, there is no defense of the white farmers from the blacks to just go take the farms because, of course, they deserved it. So the wholesale slaughter of white farmers, I don't doubt that. I really don't doubt that. And of course the blacks took over the farms and then destroyed them, and then the crops all failed because they didn't know what they were doing, and then the whole country goes hungry. That's believable to me.
Yeah, definitely. I saw a thing where they went into a caravan park. I think it was on Vice or something like that. They went to a caravan park and it was just really poor white people. I was like, whoa. Yeah.
Well, that's this movie. I wish I could remember the name of it right now.
Oh, really? Yeah, right.
Just look up Lauren Southern.
Yeah, I'll look that up.
She's a pretty girl, so she's easy on the eyes, and she's labeled right wing, so of course that makes her hateful.
Yeah, it's called Borderless. That's it. Oh, is it Farmlands? It's Farmlands. Yeah.
Both those names sound familiar.
Yeah, maybe she did too.
Yes. Yeah, I would watch it. I don't really like watching stuff like that. It's too depressing. Because it does seem like it's reality.
She did a second movie called Borderless. It's the migrant crisis in Europe.
Oh, well, what's the one about the white genocide?
That's Farmlands.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I send her money for Borderless. I have it. I haven't watched it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Actually, I don't even know. Yeah. She should have sent me that movie because if I helped fund it, I should have got it. But I don't even know where I got it. I think I just got it off YouTube.
Yeah, it's actually, I saw a clip for it on YouTube. It wouldn't surprise me. I think, like, Lauren Southern, like, her political stuff kind of ended last year. I remember she got in trouble for, like, affiliating with, like, might have been, like, Jewish people or something, maybe, but kind of guessing there. But, yeah, she did pretty, looks like pretty well-produced movies, documentaries anyway. I'm just looking at clips of it now. But, it probably is true. I mean, when I worked for South African people in a warehouse, like, 10 years ago, and the lady that was my boss, she was saying that Johannesburg is over. It's finished. It's like, I'll never go back there. It's so sad. It's like, okay. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. But she was complaining about how much they have to pay workers here, and they loaded up their containers there for like $100, just got a whole bunch of low paid workers and just load up your containers where they had to pay me $20 an hour or something. But anyway,
the Western nations are expensive to operate in.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which is why they're all leaving.
Yeah. Should I read off the blog?
Yeah, sure. You can read something that catches your interest.
All right, cool.
I can tell you I'm interested in it because that's why I put it there.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we've got Hiroshima was a firebombing since nuclear bombs are a psyop. And... nuclear bombs are a psyop.
I got that... sometimes I repeat posts. I got that off Twitter. I have a lot of different sources that I find stuff on, and I do a search on Twitter for nuclear hoax.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't always look at that feed. I use a program that you might like called TweetDeck.
Mm-hmm.
TweetDeck. That used to be an independent company until Twitter bought it and made it not do much.
Oh, okay.
These big tech companies, anyone that's small, they tend to buy up and then they close it because they don't like maybe what they're doing or they don't like competition. But anyway, TweetDeck is still working, and Twitter owns it. And it's a good way to search different feeds for Twitter. You can have different columns with different feeds in it.
So TweetDeck.com. Yeah, okay.
Because
that's
Twitter is a mountain. Twitter is a mountain of information. And then if you can't access it, then it's useless. But if you look for certain words in Twitter, then you can find interesting tweets.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I'm always looking for the word nuke hoax. I'm always looking for the words PSYOP. I'm always looking for the word Clues Forum. Just to see if anyone is talking about these things. Otherwise, you'd never find this information. So, for the most part, none of those words come up very often. But when they do, they're in a nice column under TweetDeck where I can see them easily. Mm-hmm. And that person did something, did a tweet about the new Cokes. I don't know if they were being serious about the new Cokes, but they posted that link to Zero Hedge, which sort of says what I've always said, that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were probably firebombed.
Mm-hmm.
Because war, if you believe war is a hoax, war is about destruction and relocation, and of course, reconstruction as well. That's where the money is. You destroy something, usually move people out. Most of the time they're not trying to kill anyone in a wholesale genocidal manner.
Mm-hmm.
So they get everyone out, basically force them out at gunpoint or scare the hell out of them to leave. And then they put them in a camp somewhere. And then they destroy the city. And then they loan them the money to rebuild it with their businesses.
Mm.
What a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the new Cokes is, I'm fascinated by it, to be honest. And as you were saying before, there really isn't a lot on it at all. Like, there's maybe two books on it, you know. And one of the books is a fiction book. Well, that's what I found anyway.
Well, no, but what's the fiction book called?
I'll try and find it. But the whole idea of the fiction book is, it might have been Hoax Busters, I heard it, but someone termed it a limited hangout. So, like, the whole idea is that nuclear bombs don't work, but they work if they're stationary. So, let me start that again. They don't work as a bomb being dropped from something, but they work if they're stationary and they're in an environment which is suitable for it. Like, they're not, there's no trajectory or velocity on them. They're in a still environment, and then they can get them to work. But as a bomb dropping, they can't work. So the story is about how the nuclear bomb is hoax, but they can do it. See what I'm saying? So it is like a limited hangout.
No, you're absolutely right the way you describe it. Limited hangout is the absolute correct way to describe that. So they're basically guarding the secret that nukes are fake. They're guarding the idea that nuclear science is phony, and they're just slightly varying the official story that nuclear bombs can be dropped from airplanes and destroy entire areas, if not the world.
Mm. Yeah.
You got everything you said is correct.
Yeah, I wish I could find that book right now, but whoever I was listening to, they couldn't get the author on for an interview. He was pretty unwilling to do anything, any interview regarding the book or anything like that. But anyway, I don't know. It's, I
well,
can't
maybe
speak
that adds
right
to
now.
The mystique of the whole idea.
Maybe yeah, he's trying exactly.
to appear controversial.
Yeah, perhaps, yeah. But yeah, I find it fascinating. I think I was... who was it? The Jesse War guy. That was my first encounter with it. And I didn't believe it at the time either when I heard him on Hoax Busters, or maybe it was you guys. I was like, I don't know. There must be something to it, you know. But now that I think about it...
Well, Jesse Waugh promotes the official narrative of 9/11, so...
Yeah, he does, yeah, yeah.
So he's sort of on our side with nukes, but then he just goes and spoils it with his 9/11 story. So, you know, you can never get the whole package with any of these guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, didn't he say he was one of the guys running out from the dust cloud? Like, I think that was
yeah, he was
the wording
yeah,
of
he
it
was
anyway.
Somehow He was somehow integrating himself into the 9/11 event to make it seem real.
Yeah, yeah. And was pretty anti-no plane or whatever when... Anyway, yeah, that...
Yeah, he was a little too vehemently against our way of thinking, so... I would suppose that's just to really almost discredit himself.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I guess there's many purposes to be, if he's a controlled agent in that way. Maybe he is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but that's really it. But yeah, the thing that I think about now is that we haven't seen footage from a nuclear bomb for a long time now. Yeah, oh, you never will. Exactly, yeah. But we haven't seen fake footage for, like, over 50 years, would it be? I think the Tsar bomber is, like, sort of the last footage of it, you know?
Yeah, you really haven't. Maybe they're just afraid because now we have cameras that can show pimples on top of other pimples. They're so detailed, so maybe they don't want to get caught in phony footage anymore. I don't know.
There's a great site which it uses Google Maps or something like that, some mapping software, and you can drop a bomb on that place, and you can cycle through all the weapons that are in people's arsenals, or like make your own megaton or kiloton kind of thing, and it brings up the estimated kills, the estimated damage. It's like quite detailed, that's where I found out about something called the Davy Crockett weapon system, which was a tactical nuclear recoilless gun for firing M388 nuclear projectile that was deployed by the United States during the Cold War. It was one of the smallest nuclear weapon systems ever built, and it is named after American soldier, congressman, and folk hero Davy Crockett. So, this one was a weird one for me because my understanding of... I had a gap in my knowledge, even though these things aren't freaking real. I always thought that there was a minimum kind of yield that they had to do for their weapons kind of thing. And I didn't know things like this existed. I'll post it into the into the notes. But this thing has a damage of, like, maybe 30 meters, 40 meters. You know, it's that small of a nuke. Like, what would be the point of that, number one? And then number two, why didn't the U.S. military use it? You know, it seems like it's a decent weapon.
A mini nuke?
This is a mini nuke, right?
Oh, yeah.
I always thought that I was wrong. But I was wrong about the whole thing being real anyway, but that Hiroshima was kind of, whatever that weapon was, Little Boy, whatever it was called, was kind of the minimum that you needed. You know, there was a minimum threshold for these nuclear weapons, so to speak, and the maximum threshold was just forever. You know, that just goes up and up. But, yeah. Yeah, so there's this website, and you can, it's obviously government funded or something, military funded, and you can just scare the crap out of yourself, so to speak, and look up how you're going to die and all that kind of thing. But I must admit, I was never really scared by nuclear weapons. And maybe it's just more of a Gen X or a baby boomer thing, because it seems to have tapered off.
Well, yeah,
now,
you're,
you know.
You're too far away from the fear propaganda of the 50s.
Yeah, definitely.
We're all way too far removed from that. That's why. That's why you're not afraid of it, because you're not exposed to the propaganda anymore. It's just sitting in the background that's really not been developed at all lately. They don't promote it at all.
Yeah, I think they say it like a bit tongue-in-cheek, how Trump's going to cause a nuclear war or something, and it's just so overused that it means nothing now to some extent. But yeah.
We're numb to the story.
Yeah. I posted a picture of this thing, and it's so ridiculous. It's like a small-looking bomb, nuclear bomb-looking bomb, and it's just sitting on this huge rocket, or this tiny rocket. It's just completely ridiculous. And I tried talking to a friend of mine about the whole nuclear bomb thing, and he really didn't buy it. But one of the things that he bought was that, why is the mushroom cloud associated with nuclear bomb? You know, a mushroom cloud happens without being it's got nothing to do with radiation, nothing to do with nuclear bomb. It's just the way that it's just a cloud form, an unnatural cloud formation, you know? And,
resemble a TNT explosion. TNT is real.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. And
it might resemble that, because that's probably what it was. It was an actual explosion in that area.
Well, even before I knew that nukes were completely fake, a friend of mine was a mechanic, and a battery blew up in his face. And while he was underneath the hood, and it wasn't too bad. Like, he didn't have eyebrows for ages. He looked like a complete smackhead. But
he was singed.
And this guy was already weird as well, so he just made it real hard for himself. but he was telling me, he was like,
had a hard time getting chicks after that. Oh,
yeah, he just constantly has a hard time.
I gotta take a quick break. Hold that thought.
All right. Okay, so we may as well read over the Davy Crockett device. That's what I got up right now. The Davy Crockett recoilless spigot gun was developed in the late 1950s for use against Soviet and North Korean armor and troops in case war broke out in Europe or the Korean Peninsula. Davy Crockett section, and war broke out in both areas anyway, but no use. Davy Crockett sections were assigned to United States Army Europe and 8th United States Army armor and mechanized and non-mechanized infantry battalions. During alerts to the inner German border in the Fulda Gap, the Davy Crocketts accompanied their battalions, all 5th Corps, including 3rd Armored Division Combat Maneuver battalions, had pre-assigned positions in the Fulda Gap. These were known as GDP, or General Defense Plan positions. The Davy Crockett sections were included in these defensive deployment plans, in addition to the Davy Crockett 5 Corps had nuclear artillery rounds and atomic demolition mines, and these were also targeted on the Fulda Gap. On the Korean Peninsula, units assigned the Davy Crockett weapons primarily planned to use the passes that funneled armor as killing grounds, creating temporarily deadly radioactive zones roadblocked by destroyed tanks and other vehicles. That was a wordful. And I'm no closer to understanding this thing. But yet again, we have a completely fictitious device with a comic. It's a bomb that looks like it was made with Comic Sans font in the creator's mind, pretty much. And I'm sure people here understand that as well. It's just ridiculous, whole proposal of such a crazy device. And a friend of mine he'd be about 50, I'd say he was probably within the range for the nuclear weapons propaganda, has had dreams in the past of like nuclear nightmare. You know, it's just pretty crazy stuff. I'm thankful that I don't get incredible Terminator style death nightmares regularly.
Yep, I'm back. But
hey, yeah. So what I was saying was, my friend was saying that the cloud was a mushroom cloud that left the battery that blew up in his car, and I just immediately thought of radiation. I just remembered thinking that at the time, which I thought was now that I know this is all fake, nuclear bombs, that was one of the first things I thought of. I was like, wow, you know, that mushroom cloud with my friend, I instantly just thought of radiation with it. Like, I teed up the two straight away.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's got nothing to do with that, so... yeah.
So that little thing is supposed to be a nuclear thing.
That's supposed to be a nuclear device. Yeah.
Looks like a gun mounted on a tripod.
It looks like a bomb designed with Comic Sans in its intention. It's just a comical bomb, you know. It's ridiculous.
It looks like nothing. It only looks like what they say it is, and that doesn't really make it be anything. You were the one that gave me the link to the pimply guy that was the building the nuclear power plant in his house. That was so much fun. I remember that story from the past, but...
Yeah, I remember watching a documentary for it. Yeah, it kind of gives me the whole don't do anything naughty vibe about it. don't do anything that little Davey would do. So I've got the Nuke Map simulator up. I'll post it into the live stream chat.
Yeah.
Pretty cool thing. I had a little bit of fun with it until I maxed out all the options. So let's go for
So you're blowing up people. You're blowing up parts of the world with this simulator software.
Yeah. I've got Melbourne on the thing right now, but I can do anywhere really. They've got a select one here: Washington D.C., New York, L.A.
You're gonna blow up Melbourne?
I'm gonna blow up Melbourne. Yeah, let's go. Let's do it. I can blow up Toronto. I can. So you better watch out. All right. Yep. So I've got pre-made weapons, or I can do a kiloton. But let's go for the Tsar bomber, that largest bomb ever, or whatever. And
Tsar. Wouldn't that be for Russians?
Yeah. The King bomber. Is that that's what a Tsar is, right? King.
Yeah.
And we've got
the. Use the Tsar bomber outside of Russia.
But it's the bomber. The bomber. It's not just a bomb, it's a bomber. Anyway. Alright, so I've got the airburst option or a surface option. And I chose airburst. So let's detonate. Alright, so we got in Melbourne.
Whose website is this? Who created this?
I have no idea. It's called nuclearsecrecy.com/nukemap. Yeah.
Who is nuclearsecrecy.com?
I'll go to that. All right.
What are they trying to do? Scare us or something?
All right. Restricted data. The nuclear secrecy blog. All right. Well, I'll just... all right, Alex Wallerstein, or Wallerstein, is a historian of science and nuclear weapons and a professor at Stevens Institute of Technology. Okay. Let's go to About Me.
What is Stevens Institute of Technology?
Let's look at that. And that's in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Hoboken, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Across from New York City.
Yep.
Across the river.
Oh, yeah, they got a picture of it. There's the Freedom Tower. Yes,
right.
That's
freedom.
It. That's it.
Let freedom reign. Oh.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Dreams, they feel real while we're in them, right? It's only when we wake up that we realize something is actually strange.
Yeah.
Hey.
Like John Travolta.
All right, I'll read a little bit about this guy. At Harvard, I began studying the history of nuclear weapons and gradually realized that the secrecy question was large, fascinating, and important, and not as well studied or understood as many other aspects of the bomb. My dissertation, Knowledge and the Bomb, Nuclear Secrecy in the United States, 1939 to 2008, sought to provide both a narrative and an analytical framework for understanding the major shifts, ruptures, and periods of stability with regards to American thinking about secrecy and the atom. I am in the process of turning it into a book under contract with the university. Okay. Yeah. So that's this guy, and yeah, his big thing was...
What on earth is he talking about? I don't get that. I'm a little thick. What on earth is he talking about? Nuclear bombs were a method to educate Americans how to keep a secret?
I think it's probably linked to... larger geopolitical kind of maneuvering and stuff, I guess. Because it's obviously a shared secret between countries, but I know what you mean. That was a wordful. But it's obviously...
Is this a real person?
Yeah. It's... I immediately just thought mainstream, you know, so, but let's just check out the casualties in Melbourne. So we've got 1.8
children.
No, I don't think so. He's a, he went to Harvard. He calls himself an archive rat.
Yeah, sure.
After graduating from Harvard, I stayed on as a research fellow at the Managing the Atom Project and the International Security Program at the Harvard Kennedy School, which gave me an amazing opportunity to learn that historians of science don't think about nuclear issues at all in the same way that people interested in non-proliferation do. Okay. What's
more
his
mumble
name?
Jumble.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, for certain, he's got a, we'll see if he is real. We'll see if he's got a video up on YouTube. There's a video there. So,
what's he saying?
We've got one titled The Culture of Secrecy by Alex Valestein and Mac West. A new arms race. So he's into this kind of stuff where he talks about non-proliferation, what's the current status of everyone's nuclear arsenal, how are nuclear bombs going to be utilized in the future. You know what I mean? But, I mean, so, look, if he looks like he exists somewhere, but for sure this guy has got to... Surely he knows the trick with the whole thing. You can't look at stuff for that long and not see it. You know what I mean? But, yeah, he's got a video here under the Atomic Heritage Foundation. Okay. They must manage that place where they blowed up the first one, or whatever. The heritage of the bomb.
Well, he said, I would say he's in on promoting the hoax.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We got him here.
That's his stick. Yeah.
He's got how Hollywood should write about nukes. So, these are the videos. I'm just reading out the titles for them. Making a nuclear attack more personal. Like your nuke map. you know, where it says in Melbourne.
Yeah, we're not going to believe it unless we see the actual damage on a software simulator. But if we personalize it to our location, then we'll really feel the pain.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've got here where Melbourne just suffered 1.8 million fatalities and 1.4 injuries.
Oh, so there you go.
Yeah, it's all right, man. And let's go to the Davy Crockett device. This was the smallest one, the smallest kilotons. And we're looking at estimated fatalities of 1,270 and injuries of 300. Yeah. That's a small bomb.
Poor Davy Crockett. He had to lend his name to such a phony device.
We've got down the bottom here, created by Alex Wellerstein, 185 million detonations and counting. So there you go. And he's on Twitter.
Only 185 people have used it?
Oh, 185 million detonations.
Oh, wow, there's a lot of people that are willing to blow up their local neighborhood.
Yeah, that's...
Well, you've done it at least 10 times.
Yeah, well, I probably did the biggest bomb, then the smallest bomb, and then I would have changed it from...
Okay, I give you permission to blow up Toronto. Let me know how far and wide it'll go?
Yep. All right, let's have a look. All right, we've got Toronto. Which bomb do you want?
Well, let's go for the Tsar bomb. Come on.
All right, okay.
Let's go big or go home. I want to know how much of the U.S. you're going to take out at the same time.
Do you want... We'll do Airburst. That's a bigger one. Airburst is bigger. All right, here we go. Here we go.
I want to be able to video from my backyard.
Okay, so the fireball radius is 6.1 kilometers. But don't be fooled by that. Don't be fooled. The air blast radius is... 32 kilometers. So the air blast radius is 5 PSI.
Just short of 33.
32.6, actually. Yeah. So,
that's 5 PSI.
Round up, exactly. That's 5 PSI pressure, so I don't know what that means. I think that means you're dead. The
five
thermal rate. 5 PSI overpressure. So I'm not sure exactly what overpressure means. At 5 PSI overpressure, most residential buildings collapse. Injuries are universal. Fatalities are widespread. Often used as a standard benchmark for medium damage in cities. Okay. All right. So now we've got the thermal radio.
That's just the air pressure.
Yeah.
That's just the air pressure went up 5 all around. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So we've got the thermal radiation radius, and that's 73 kilometers, extending... So that's extending past Niagara Falls. There's a place called Sutton West that's on the edge of it.
That's north of Toronto.
There's a place called Guelph, as in Guelph.
That's in the west. That's the west,
And then on the south, it extends down to Welland.
Welland,
and
right. How about east? How far east?
East, on Newcastle.
Oh, Newcastle, wow.
Yeah, because the east is Lake Ontario. Yeah,
well, south is Lake Ontario. Well, east includes So Newcastle would include our two nuclear power plants in the east, so that would catch them.
But you still
you
got
think
enough.
That, they would give an extra kick to the whole thing if they got triggered into an uncontrolled chain reaction.
Yeah, China syndrome or whatever. And
they,
it just
they
takes
would just
out.
Keep the thing going.
Yeah, it takes out Peterborough and, you know what I mean? Like, all these other places past there. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So what's
but we
the
got
total
the
population there? That's got to be that's got to be 10 million right there.
You want to guess? 10 million? We got 2.7 fatalities.
I know the population of that area is at least 5 million.
Mm. So we got there you go. So 2.7 million fatalities and 2.8 million injuries.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the whole population.
Of the area.
Done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That seems a little low. I think he needs to get some updated census numbers. That doesn't seem high enough.
Yeah, he needs to, what was it again? He needs to be making a nuclear attack a bit more personal. Because,
yeah, I want names. I want to know who dies. Then I'll feel real bad.
Let's detonate the fun bomb, though. The Davy Crockett one.
That won't even knock over a building, I'm sure.
Yeah, we got so it landed right near Queen Street West, and Chestnut Street, and we got estimated fatalities of 4,000 and estimated injuries of 2,000. Yeah, so.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a bad place to do it because all our hospitals are downtown, so that really would complicate things.
Oh, okay. Yep. Break access, maybe, or something. Is that what you're saying? That kind of thing?
Well, yeah, all the research hospitals are downtown, so they'd all have to be closed because they'd be radiated.
Yeah. I can read a couple of this guy's tweets. Let's find a tweet.
Sure.
Here we go. Here's one about NukeMap. I really love it when people tell me how they use NukeMap in teaching. I really ought to be collecting such stories systematically for my tenure file. If you do use NukeMap in the classroom, I'm more than interested to hear how you use it.
We use it to laugh at him. Tell him that.
I think I might respond to that when I've got time.
So he's a propagandist, basically.
Was that just not screaming propaganda? I really love it when people tell me how they use NukeMap in teaching. I really ought to be collecting such stories systematically for my tenure file. Okay.
Yeah, why don't you send him a tweet? What's the recommended method of using your NukeMap? What should we tell the class, for instance? Okay, blow up this area. What is the discussion about exactly? How do we all live better lives with this education? Do we go sign up for Greenpeace and go? Do we march outside the power plant? What do we do?
Alright, here we go. If H-bomb secrecy appeals to you, I have an article coming out in a soonish issue of Physics Today about how the US accidentally lost the secret of a H-bomb a month after Mike shot, and my book on the history of nuclear secrecy goes all over this and more. Okay, that was a bit of a nowhere. But yeah, this guy's a propagandist. There's nothing of value here, I guess you could say, when it comes to the hoax. Oh, there is, if you know about it, like what I read before that one, how he's interested in the psychological effect of his NukeMap program on people and their stories, you know,
Like, he's interested in stories. So, yeah, probably. I might actually listen to a couple. He's got a lot of lectures up here, and he's on YouTube. But, like this one, Radiation is All Around, and The War Room. Yeah, we've heard that, all that before. And, yeah, to my knowledge, there's no footage of Pakistani or Indian nuclear bombs. There just right. isn't any. It's only US, some, from what I gather, English, French, Russian. That's it. You don't get any out of Kim Il, or whatever, in North Korea. You don't get any from China. You don't get any from Pakistan or India, because if they did do it, it'd be obvious that it's a fake. It's totally fake, you know?
Yeah, they don't have good Hollywood studios like we do.
Yeah, exactly. And because one of the things that always I couldn't find out what the deal was with when I believed in nuclear bombs. They've always got like these guidelines next to nuclear bombs that sometimes kind of look like lightning, like forks of lightning going to the ground. And I found on just a website people talking about nukes, and someone said, oh yeah, they're to see to measure how much how big the explosion was in terms of height and stuff. They're flares, you know what I mean? Anyway, if you can envisage that, like those straight lines that you get from a nuclear explosion in some of them anyway. But when I was reading this this forum, someone posted a video, and there was a guy in there, and he was saying, he's like, every time we blow a nuclear bomb up, we learn something new. Like, we learn so much more. He was like some old scientist guy.
But we don't share it with anyone because it's a secret.
Exactly, it's a secret. Like, old mate here, Alex Bellestein, and... Where's his book? He's got to have his book somewhere here. But, yeah, the New Coates is... Not many people are talking about this, are they? I mean, not many people are talking about fake anything, really, like, on a constant, a big measure of it. But, it's even smaller with the new Cokes thing, because...
Well, Donald Trump's the only one that talks fakery, and it's fake news.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I actually heard a recording of you on, maybe it was Humble and Fred, and they were trying to tie you to fake news or whatever. And you kindly reminded them that, let's make that a distinction. It's like, that's him. I'm not talking.
No, that was good that you listened to that. I'm pleased you're going to the archives. That was one of my mainstream appearances.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
They pretty much banished me. They blocked me on Twitter. They don't want anything to do with me. Just give me
really?
One back here.
No worries.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So let's read more about Alex Wellerstein. In the spring semester of 2011, I taught two courses at Harvard University in their history and science concentration, one of which, Science and the Cold War, was of special relevance to my research interests. The other one was an introductory course in the field of science studies, which was also fun, but featured far less nuclear weapons history than the one about the Cold War. In the spring of 2014, I taught Science and the Cold War again at Georgetown University. From 2011 until summer of 2014, I was an associate historian at the Center for History of Physics at the American Institute of Physics in College Park, Maryland. Okay, it's getting a bit boring. But, yeah, there's Alex Wellerstein, promoter of all things nuclear. We've got another project by him called Reinventing Civil Defense. And... He's speaking at a convention called The Bomb and You. because it's always personal. And that was his intention in one of those videos, how the bomb can be also again. Anyway. Our goal is...
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Getting back to reinventing civil defense, which is Alex Wellerstein's project. Reinventing civil defense is a project at the College of Arts and Letters at the Stevens Institute of Technology, funded by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. Our goal is to develop new communication strategies regarding nuclear risk that have high potential to resonate with a public audience. Building on the prior history of civil defense, we will identify what an effective, nonpartisan, level-headed approach to nuclear risk communication looks like in the 21st century. Broadly speaking, our principal investigators, working with the guidance of an advisory committee and the Carnegie Corporation of New York, will organize 2 invitation-only workshops. Okay, so that's pretty interesting. More on communication. There was one bit there that was interesting. Our goal is to develop new communication strategies regarding nuclear that have high potential to resonate with a public audience. That pretty much says it all then. The technology doesn't need to be put into nuclear bombs. It needs to be put into people like this who present the story.
Propaganda.
That's the idea.
Yeah. The bombs work great, just they're not selling as well as they used to. Mm-hmm. To scare the public, because they don't have any real evidence, and people don't really buy the past as much as they do the now.
Yeah, I think I looked up a long time ago a modern nuclear test, and what it is just a just testing the trigger mechanism. So they've got the bomb, supposedly, and they test like whether the device, all the electronics in it, is working. Click, you know. So I will find that and I'll put it up there. But that's the as far as faking it goes now with the nuclear bomb. It's until the CGI gets better, I guess you could say. They're not really interested in making any more nuclear bomb propaganda movies. And you were talking about Miles Mathis earlier. There was one photo where all their shadows are going the wrong way. Obviously the sun is lighting up their shadows, and it's just amazing when you see it. I find, anyway, it's amazing to have that much. I don't worry about this shit. I didn't really worry about it beforehand, but now I've got no reason to worry about it at all. I'm guessing maybe you heard that bit from his second project, the reinventing civil defense, where it was, regarding nuclear risks. Our goal is to develop new communication strategies regarding nuclear risks that have high potential to resonate with a public audience. So that sums up this new thing, which is reinventing civil defense. And I don't know, is the Carnegie Corporation of New York something? Kind of rang a bell. Anyway, sounds like a seedy modern organization, you know.
Well, that's probably old Carnegie. Andrew Carnegie was,
from
the railway days, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They probably still have lots of money that they helped steal from the taxpayer back when they built the railway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this guy's dissertation is all about, the secrecy of it all. A chapter in his dissertation is The Epistemology of Cold War Secrecy, Debating Secrecy and Safeguards. Yeah, so that's pretty, pop culture and nuclear bomb talk to some extent.
Yeah, Have you used the fake bot player before?
I haven't, no.
Would you like to try it?
Sure. Okay.
I'm going to put a link to John LeBond's last video. I'll put it in the show notes. See if you can play it. Take the link and paste it into the command. Type pound play or pound. And under the command subform, type plus sign play and then type the link.
Okay.
Or paste the link.
Okay, yep. So I've got the link. Copy link. Commands. Oh, there we go. Yep.
One of the things that I love about doing what I do is that sometimes I get to share some good news. And on the anniversary of the JFK so-called assassination, I'm here to share with you guys some very good news, and that is this. On the day of JFK's supposed assassination, nobody died, nobody got hurt, period. What do I mean by that? I mean that the guy that you see in the car there, the character known as JFK, possibly played by a real person also called JFK, possibly played by somebody completely different, but the actual character, he might have died, but no human died. No human died in that car. No one got shot. What was actually shot was a dummy, and what I'm going to link to in the info box below is an analysis by a good friend of mine, Dave J, who shows you that the supposed assassination was really just a dummy getting shot. Now, you might be thinking, what? What? Why would they pretend to kill a president? What would be the point of that? Well, I'll also provide a link in the info box below to this. It's called King Kill 33, and it was written supposedly by a guy called James Shelby Downard and a guy called Michael Hoffman. Now, Michael Hoffman is the guy who popularized the term revelation of the method, which you might have heard other people parroting before. James Shelby Downard, I believe, is a fictional character and is the work of Michael Hoffman. But that's a whole other story that I don't have time to go into right now. But it doesn't matter who wrote this particular book. What matters is that what is explained is the symbolism in the King Kill. But here's the problem. The guy who wrote this book, whoever wrote it, still pretends or still believes, one of the two, that JFK actually died that day. So if you can combine an understanding of nobody died, nobody got hurt, with an understanding of the symbolism, then you'll come to a synthesis, a real understanding of what the JFK assassination was all about. And that's what I'm also going to offer you. So check the links in the info box below. I'll send out a link to this call to the mailing list of johnlebond.com, and I explain all of this and so much more in that call. Now, you might be thinking, what? The Matrix? What does it have to do with the JFK assassination? It's a very long story, but here's what it comes down to. These things are all connected, okay? There's something going on in this world, whoever's behind it, whatever's responsible for it, there's something going on, and it's all connected. I know this sounds very hard to believe, but that's why I provide these links. That's why I provide these resources for you for free, so you can do your own research. So go and check out this video for free. Link in the info box below. JFK, it's a dummy. Go and check out this book available for free. Link in the info box below. King Kill 33 by Michael Hoffman and the fictional character James Shelby Downard. And also make sure you check out the mailing list at johnlebond.com. It's completely free. Sign up for that, and I'll send out a link in a couple of days to this podcast where I explain all of this and so much more. So on the 22nd of November, John the Bond signing off. Remember, check the links in the info box below. And until next time, no more monkey business.
No more monkey business! No! No more
monkey! Hey, that was great.
Yeah, it was
good.
Thank
you, John LeBond. Great promotion of the website. Appreciate that, Johnny.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Is it true that there's a video that's gone missing after all these years that shows the dummy? I was listening to someone today. I think it was, you know, Crow 77.
I know, I've heard of him. Yeah, I listen to him. Is that what
he
is?
Oh, like another YouTuber said he contacted him, and Crow said that the video's gone. It's been scrubbed. They're talking about this video that existed at one point. Anyway.
I do not know. Everything's been scrubbed off YouTube. That's interesting, so.
Yeah, pretty much, hey. I could gather there's a fair amount of 9/11 stuff that probably has been, right?
I don't know. There's only a couple videos that I recommend, and those are the ones that I posted on my website under FakeTube.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the FakeTube subcategory by clicking on the right category button and looking for FakeTube, that should list all the videos on FakeTube, which is my paid server for videos.
I'm trying to find it. I'm just getting a whole bunch of porn sites. FakeTube, is it?
Well, you got to go on fakeologist.com.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, I don't actually have a registered domain named FakeTube.com.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta be clear about what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that was... I'm guessing your take on JFK is the dummy situation. Didn't nobody died, nobody got hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
John's talking about the Zapruder film.
Yeah, yeah, of course. It came out... Yeah.
Whatever year that was it 10 years later?
8 years, I believe.
No, more than that.
Eight years. Oh, was it? Yeah.
I don't remember the date.
But yeah, so, and is Zapruder like a 33 degree Mason? Is that the word anyway?
That's just more, that's just more conspiracy candy than really just adds to the...
Yeah, true.
That fluffs up the story.
We got Rollo on the stream. If he's here to chat.
Good day, mate. Don't be shy. Open up your mic, mate. Rollo's never shy. But we're still in his available time to talk, I think. It's the evening there at 10:30, I believe. Newcastle, Australia.
Oh yeah, Newcastle.
There he is.
Hey, guys. Hey, guys. Good day. How are you?
Hello, farter. How's the farter today?
Oh, not too bad. I just went to the VA Supercars. I'm still a little bit wasted, but I sent you
a
link.
No.
Oh, just a little bit. How you going, baby? I heard you the other day, and so you're obviously you're not John LeBron.
I'm not John LeBron.
Because John LeBron's in the room here with us.
Unless there's dual accounts.
His avatar is.
No. What's going on? So you're discussing JFK, are you?
I just put up a video of John LeBron's JFK, What You Don't Know. So we just played that. And we're just talking about the Zapruder film.
Yep. He was a diamond dealer, apparently.
Oh, okay. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yep. And I always suspected, what did Dave J reckons it was a dummy? I suspected that it was a body double guy.
No, I like the dummy, though. I like the dummy idea a lot better.
The dummy idea.
They had Jim Nobody Henson died. Sitting in the front seat working the hand with those metal rods that you use to move a puppet's hands and heads.
Look, there's so much wrong with the Zapruder film. I mean, if you look at Jackie's right elbow just before the headshot, it's just ridiculous. It's like, it may as well be a cartoon. It's been so manipulated. Like,
well, would you agree that they did a huge job on the JFK PSYOP? They put so much effort into all the alternate stories. It's so big.
It's where we got the word conspiracy theory from. It was Rathi Noel, trigger words like that, you know, Sixth Floor of the Book Depository.
Babushka Lady.
Exactly. And the media have used that for years as a term of derision. You're just a conspiracy theorist if you don't believe. I mean, the original story, everyone's seen the movie JFK, right? So the official story is, what, three shots from the...
Were you like me, Romo?
Were
you like me that you thought when the movie JFK came out by Oliver Stone, did you think that was going to explain it once and for all, so we all got stuck?
I was asleep back then, yeah.
I thought for sure we'd get to know what happened. But I walked out of that theater being so unsatisfied, thinking, come on, you left us hanging again.
So is Oliver Stone, like, limited hanging?
Establishment. Gosh.
Establishment. Oh, yeah.
Now that I think
but
about
that movie,
it, I mean, yeah.
That movie really just centered on, oh, my God, I can't remember the guy's name. The attorney from New Orleans
Jim Garrison.
Jim Garrison. That was a whole story I didn't really know until the movie. Mm. And they made it a very personal story about him more than anything, saying how he tried his best to figure it out.
No, he was in on it.
But
he was in on it.
But no dice.
Yep. No, he was in on it. Absolutely. I mean, I've seen
another
Jim Garrison. Have you seen the Jim Garrison tapes? The actual real Jim? He actually plays Earl Warren in the film just before he died, Baker. You know that?
No.
Earl Warren, who did the Warren Report, which said,
the magic bullet.
Yeah, the Warren Commission. He plays Earl Warren in it. That's how, you know.
That's how intertwined it is.
Good one, yeah.
Yeah, the idea that...
He died a few months after. He only has two scenes in it, and he died a few months after rapping on the film. Yeah.
He died. I didn't even know he was sick at the time.
Yeah, you look at him. He's as crook as a dog. Yeah. You could see he's got no weight. He was a fairly big fellow when...
But what a story. What a story.
Oh, yeah.
They must have had the best writers on that story. The best writers of the day.
They used... who was... Mars. They used his screenplay. So, Jim Mars, I think his name is.
Yeah.
For the film. There's a lot of truth in it, though. I mean, when the car comes up and then turns onto Elm Street, yeah. Why not just shoot him coming up? No, they wait for him to turn the corner. And then they do the whole charade. It's a charade.
Mm. There's so many A-list actors in here as well. Kevin Costner, Kevin Bacon, Tommy Lee Jones, Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Yeah, insane.
Have you seen the movie, BB, or are you too young?
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah. But I didn't know about it until I was about 25, and some older guy I worked with was like, you haven't seen JFK? Oh, gotta go.
What are they promoted it as the story that won't go away.
Oh, really? Okay. Have you seen the other one he did? I'm pretty sure he did RFK, didn't he? Which was like less well known, I think.
Yeah.
Sirhan, Invisible Hand, or whatever it is. Have you seen that picture? Like, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
That picture is... It's,
the missing hand in the picture,
yeah. Yeah, it is. Oh. that whole... I mean, then you've got Chappaquiddick, the Kennedy story, the Ted Kennedy, the other one.
Have you seen that one?
Yep. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
I've had it downloaded for years, and I've never seen it. Is it worth it?
Yeah. Yep. I don't think there's any truth to be found there either. I think one of the Dave. Have you seen the movie Dave?
No, but that's
with
when
Kevin
Kline is the president.
Yeah. Oliver Stone's in that, and he's got this little cameo, and it's very amusing. Oh yeah, it's great. It's a good laugh.
Hey Rollo, I know you do music on your show. And I just finished watching a Bee Gees documentary.
Oh,
yeah. And they spent a lot of time in Australia. I guess they could almost
Well, they're
be...
Australians.
Well, no, they're born in Manchester.
Oh, were they? Oh, okay, the brothers gave birth.
Yeah, they follow the same... They followed your father, the same pathway to better fortunes in Australia.
I think Hello? Barry's... Is Barry still alive? I think he's lost. He's the only last one, isn't he?
Well, do you think the
Robin
other brothers are actually
Maurice.
Dead?
Well, we all die.
I know, we but all... he doesn't have a lot to say about how they died. But getting off death, go watch the movie Bee Gees, a documentary called Bee Gees, This Is Where I Come In, which is a great song they sing.
What's
go
it
watch
this,
that. It's
this
fantastic.
Is... Where
this
I
is where I come in. The only version I can find on YouTube is got Russian subtitles, but it's still perfectly good to listen to and watch, as long as you ignore all those funny characters at the bottom of the screen.
Oh, this is where I came in. Yeah. Okay.
This is where I came in, yeah. Very, I never heard the story. And, you know, they seem like a very well-put-together bunch of guys. And they just didn't seem like they got corrupted by the music industry in any way. And they lasted a long time. They wrote 1,000 songs. They're more prolific than the Beatles.
Yep. All right.
Fantastic.
Oh, I'll watch it now. I've just been given the wind-up from my wife. I just wanted to say a quick g'day to BV.
The wind-up? You just got here.
I know. I was just listening in, but my wife's getting shirty. It's 1 in the morning, so, yeah. I'll just
what
listen
What
time
in. Is it?
1 in the morning, Sunday morning.
1? I thought you were 14
Or quarter to
difference.
Quarter to 1. Quarter to 1.
Wait, so you're...
Is John LeBron, has he opened up the mic at all at the moment?
No.
He hasn't? Well, I'll just listen in if you don't mind.
No, I'm done. I'm done. BB has
You're
to go.
You're done? I'll be
no, I'm done. We've been on for 3 hours.
Right.
This has been another great call. Did you hear Chris is back?
Chris Kendall?
He's back.
Great.
Go to fakeologist.com.
All right, I'll
I got a
right
link
now.
To the latest, the last audio. Chris is back.
All right, give me a sec. Give me a sec.
And TalkShoe has a new Australian number, so you can call in any time. Right after right. John Laws.
Laws, you won't take my calls anymore. He's done with me.
What?
He's done with me. He won't take my calls anymore. I tried last week. That's why. I think he doesn't like. He's like a bully. He doesn't like people who can punch back a little bit.
Yeah.
So I kept sending the audios where we use them. He doesn't like being laughed at because he lied to me. He lied to my face. Or lied to my voice.
What happened?
When I said, we ended up dumping the whole call. And I go, no, you didn't. You didn't dump the whole call. We've got it on our Fart Podcast 45. And then
yeah.
I send him the link and I send him the timestamp and then he, I don't think he likes people that can fight back a little bit. Like, he's a bit of a bully. He's a bully. He is. But that's
you
radio
know what?
For you.
He had a bully pulpit for the longest time, which is the radio. Now we all have our own radio station and we can all fight back. And these bullies, they don't own the media anymore. They are just one more insignificant slice of the internet, just like we are. So tough on them.
That's it, mate. So Chris from Hoaxbusters,
really
test the new saddle. Here we go. Chris is back. So I'll listen to this. Well, you've got one reply. Let's read the reply. Who is it? Oh, John LeBron replied. What did he say? Thanks for sharing this. I listened today. Nice to hear Chris again. When I was a young boy, I had a Teddy Ruxpin. It was my favorite thing in the world for a while there. What's that all about? Chris mentioned Obama receiving the Nobel Peace Prize, despite the U.S. being at war for the entirety of Obama's term in office. All right, yeah. Okay, I look forward to listening to that.
Yeah. BB called into that. BB, the guy you just heard, he's
hot
on the circuit now.
He sounds very much like John LeBond, doesn't he?
Yeah.
If you had those two chatting together, it would be difficult to work out which one's which. Yeah. It was like when we had lower audio. Go.
An ounce of salt is going to go nuts. He's going to say, oh, you're the same guy.
He'll be right.
Let me check your ear. Hold your ear up to the mic so I can look at it.
John LeBond just wrote, his voice is slightly deeper than mine.
Oh, he must got more testosterone.
He must be. Are you still in, Jono, are you still in Vietnam? Open your mic.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he is. Okay. 1649. Here he is.
At least he's dead.
Jono, he just unmuted. G'day, John.
The famous John LeBond is in the house.
He is in the house. He just unmuted. Muted. No, he just muted again.
He teased us some with his presence. Issues.
He's a tease. Has he said anything tonight? Or has it just been you and BB chatting away?
No, he's been listening in. He's obviously busy with the...
He's still working on his dinosaur thing, isn't it? That's why he's there in Vietnam, right? Yeah. No, yeah, he's just been at the VA too, because I would have been at KISS tonight, Faco, if Paul Stanley didn't get a throat infection.
KISS is still touring there in Australia?
Yeah, well, they should have been. If you look, check out that, I sent you a link. Check out that link.
Yeah.
That's me at the V8 Supercars here in Newcastle. But they cancelled their Australian tour.
How much did that cost to go to a KISS concert in 2019?
$115. Australian dollars.
That's not terrible.
Yeah. And that's, I'll never know now because they cancelled, but that was supposedly, close to the stage. Because the only two original members are Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons. Peter Criss can't drum anymore because of, I think, drugs or something.
Old age, really, come on.
Oh, well, old age. Yeah. What happened to him?
Even the very clean, very upstanding-like person named Neil Peart of Rush, the drummer, he said, I cannot give 100% anymore, so he retired. He does not want to be an old drummer missing beats. So he said, I'm done. Rush is done.
Mm-hmm. And I think that you would agree with me. He's probably one of the best drummers that ever drummed. It was so good. I love the story. I love the story about when they, what's his name?
Alex Lifeson.
Yeah, when they were looking for a drummer, Geddy Lee, and they were looking for a drummer, and they got this guy that all he had done is lived in the bush somewhere and got a drum kit. And like, when they got him in, I love the story. They just couldn't believe it. They just went. He was so far and away better than
who lived in the bush?
Neil Peart. Yeah.
What do you mean the bush? He lived in, I don't think he lived in the bush.
Well, I don't know if he had bush the there in Canada. Story. Well, I don't know. I heard he just came out of nowhere.
He lived in this, I don't know about the bush. He lived in a city outside of Toronto. I actually just went to Lakeside Park last week.
Mm-hmm.
Lakeside Park, which is on Lake Ontario, which actually would be a great place to do a flat earth video. And because you can see the entire skyline of Toronto. I went to Lakeside Park and I played the song Lakeside Park, written by Neil Peart. And I saw all the elements of the song in the park. There was a carousel and weeping willows. And it was fantastic. It was almost like I was in the song.
Oh, wonderful.
But what I want to say about Neil Peart is, not only is he one of the best drummers in the world, studying all the best drummers himself, but he's also the best lyricist, I think, in the world. The lyrics he came up, he wrote all the lyrics to all the Rush songs. And he's a drummer, so he's one of the most intelligent drummers ever.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
I just kind of...
Fantastic.
I mean, I was a late comer to Rush. My brother was
too.
The one that got me into
Rush. Me too,
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not an indiscriminate Rush fan. I like the middle part of Rush. I'm not a big fan of their beginnings, and I certainly am not a big fan of the stuff at the end, but the middle, they had a section of albums in the middle. Just, there might have been 5 or 6 or 7 of them. All fantastic. All just the best.
There was a time there that I, on my MP3 player, that's all I had. So we had, what do we have? 2112 in 1976.
2112 was a great album. That was early on. I don't know, was that the second or third or?
Moving Pictures, I'm pretty sure that's one of them. And Farewell to Kings, and Permanent Way is really good.
Yeah.
Hemispheres, I'm not sure about that album there. Fly By Night, 75.
Fly By Night was the first one. It was a little too screechy.
Power Windows,
that might be the best album they ever did.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Power Windows is just...
And Hold Your Fire is my second favorite album.
Yeah, it's got the Manhattan Project. That's a great song. And The Big Money, yep.
Oh, Territories. Ever.
Territories is good, yeah.
Great,
Marathon,
great song.
Mystic Rhythms. All the songs on there, the singles out of that.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Yeah. Yep, yep. Ooh,
Marathon.
I'm getting all nostalgic.
Another amazing
song.
Yeah, Marathon, yep. Another really unknown song that's just fantastic. So complicated.
For a three-piece band,
so
they sounded so full. They're a bit like the only other three-piece band that I remember that had a full sound like that were an Australian band, Silverchair. They were pretty good as a three-piece, but nothing. They were nowhere in the league of Rush. A lot of people don't even know
that's
them.
All right. They're different. Everyone is different.
Indeed.
But Geddy Lee. Obviously, a very strange-looking person, very strange voice. But, you know, Barry Gibb of the Bee Gees, he never used his screechy voice until they all started to like it. And they said, just keep doing that, because it's very unique.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a normal singing voice, but that's not the voice that sold. And... extremely successful band as well, the Bee Gees.
Well,
I never liked their name, but they explain where they created the name from.
Brothers Gibb, yeah. Brothers Gibb.
No, there was about 5 different reasons why they decided on Bee Gees. And they all had the same result. Yeah. So his mother's initials are BG, his initials are BG. They're the Brothers Gibb. The two people that promoted... That's... because everyone around them was a BG.
I think Barry's the only one we've got left. Always been knighted too. So
yeah, I think Unreal pointed out that they may have quote unquote killed off a couple brothers to stoke the fires of their catalog, which is totally entirely possible.
So Morris went 28th, 3, and Robin when did he leave the building? 2012. So we've only got Barry left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he seems like a really nice, together kind of person. Very, very pleasant.
And that voice was, whether you're alive or whether your brother, you're staying alive, staying alive.
Yeah.
An interesting way to sing. Have you ever seen... Have you ever seen Kenny Everett? How to Become a BG?
No. But they wrote that album before the movie.
Did they?
That album was already written before the movie was even presented to them. I believe that's what they said.
Was it Saturday Night Fever, or it was actually called Staying Alive? No, it was Saturday Night Fever, wasn't it? The one with John Travolta.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm getting the wind-up from my wife. So I'll look forward to... So did you guys go into detail about what was the whole discussion tonight about? It was about the...
we did a lot of discussion about... It started off...
Mm-hmm.
Jairus and I were talking about a murder of a young girl in France in the 80s. And that got me thinking about murders of young girls in Toronto in the 80s. In other words, they use these templates for these phony events all around the world at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Because, and no one would notice in the 80s because no one is bothering to catalog these events on any websites because there were no internet websites.
Mm-hmm.
But it was harder to see the similarities in these phony belongings.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a good chance... Jairus wasn't sure if the story he was reading was real or fake. And I said, well, it is hard to tell, but I got one that's similar here, and I think it's fake because of the use of the number of 11s and many other suspicious things, like the mother was in the media. So we talked a lot about that for a while.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely listen back to it and just see. Yeah, because I guess the JFK thing is, Vivi had to go, and it's getting so late here. It's 1 a.m. I've just posted that BG, How to Become a BG, in the general chat. It's always good to talk
to you.
I'm not sure when we're going to do the next Fart podcast, but I'll definitely give you the...
message you. What's going on? What's the reason? Why can't we keep the schedule anymore?
Oh, because... Our producer, as you well know, has got a real job. Remember what you said last week about Mark Sargent. How do people make any money? I mean, you've got a real job, and so does our producer. So,
yeah.
So we have to work around him.
Making money.
Yeah.
Well, when
a great guy.
Does he have a rotating shift where he can never commit to a certain day?
That's it. Yeah.
Oh, what a pain, eh?
Ah, well, that's okay. I mean, we're just glad to have someone of his caliber to. I mean, you heard the last one that you were on. That you were on. I mean, that was superbly produced. So, we'll work it in. Always good to talk to you, Faker.
Take care, old boy.
Okay, mate. Okay, old mate.
Bye now.
Over and out.
Say hi to Christy.
Yeah, I will. Cheers, mate.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye. Over now.
That's all, folks.